It's time for TWiT, the Cinco de Mayo edition. I'm joined by Robert Scoble, Tim Stevens of Engadget, and Ryan Schrout to talk about glass. Yes, we've got two people wearing glass in studio today. You'll get your first hands-on next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 404, recorded May 5th, 2013.
Episode not found.
This Week in Tech is brought to you by Go to Assist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and enter TWiT. And by Carbonite. Automatically and continually back up your computer files to the cloud whenever your computer is connected to the internet for only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT to get two bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers your tech week in news and with a great panel once again. Boy, it's good to have you. Tim Stevens, we got him working now.
I'm here.
Yeah, he's up in the cabin, but he's on the LTE and no windstorm. So thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Glad
nice to have you back. Tim Stevens, editor-in-chief of Engadget. Is that me making that noise?
Yes.
It's back making that noise.
It's not me.
No, it's me.
I didn't fix it.
I fixed it, but it got broken again.
I can just
pop me down. Would you?
Yeah, I've done.
I have some chat client that we thought had silence, but apparently is still. And now, of course, everybody in the chat room is going, Leo.
I have it muted.
They want to hear it. Ring, 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 ring. Also here, Robert Scoble.
Hey.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me
in
on
clothes.
Again. In clothes.
Dressed.
I could take off my clothes if you want.
No, we'll talk about that in a moment. Oddly, it wasn't the first time I'd seen a picture of you in the shower.
No, there's at least three or four.
Yeah, you and Shell did one.
I did one when I worked for Dave Weiner, too.
So this is a habit.
It's a habit.
All right. Also with us, Ryan Schrout from This Week in Computer Hardware, editor-in-chief of PC Perspective at PCPer.com. Great to have you, Ryan. Ryan, you and I are out in the cold because those of you watching a video probably already noticed two of the four panelists are wearing glass.
Well, yeah, I'll let you try it.
You guys are glass holes. So this is my first chance to wear Google glass. So, Robert, you got yours as part of the from Google I.O.
Yep. I was one of the first in line, so I had 107.
I have 737. I still haven't received my email, so I'm glad to be able to try this. And, Tim, I saw your extensive review in Engadget, really a good review.
Yeah, it's really
Thank you very much.
And that, so you got a review unit.
No, actually, ours is from I.O. as well. I was in the 700s as well, I believe. But, yeah, that was actually through the pre-order system as well.
Yeah, some of the press people got moved up a little bit. But
I know. Since I'm not in the press, I probably shouldn't get any advanced. You put this thing on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what do you see?
Now, you wear glasses, Robert, so you put it on top of your glasses?
Yeah.
You too do. You also do, don't you, Tim, or no?
No, I don't have glasses. I'm lucky that I don't have that issue. We've been doing quite a bit of testing to see what frames work and what frames don't. If you don't have frames that are kind of square or that are, you know, kind of blocky around the upper edges, it'll usually fit pretty well, but anything that's got like a squarish frame will probably have some issues.
I actually got my eyes checked and went and got contacts as well.
I'm wearing contacts right now.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I have what they call monovision. So my left eye is for reading and my right eye is for distance. Should I?
That's the right way to
That's the right way you'd want this for distance.
If you can see a billboard on the freeway with your right eye, you're ready for glasses.
Then this is the one I want. Okay.
Now, my friend, like Thomas Hawk, is blind in his right eye, and he can't use glass because he can't
They don't make any left-handed glass?
No, and I thought they were working on one, but they corrected me and said, no.
The thing that should be, I think we should say right up front, is this is a developer preview. Google's always said that.
Yep.
But people are treating it as if it's a product about to be released.
Well, 8 months from now, maybe.
Yeah. It may be 2014. I mean, you know.
No, it will be 2014. They've said that now. That it won't be this year.
Yeah, because Eric said it would be. At first, they were saying it would be this year, but now they're saying not.
Yeah.
So I don't. Right now, I'm looking, and there's a piece of plastic in front of my right eye. I don't see anything.
Yeah, it does.
I'm seeing right through it, although it's not exactly clear, but I can see through it.
Well, when they adjust it, you're not supposed to be.
You're supposed to look under it.
Yeah.
Then I'm supposed to look up to look at the.
Yeah.
Okay, and is it off or is
it's off right now? So that's the first misconception I had about glass was that it would stay on all the time.
It doesn't.
It doesn't because it eats battery. Anytime that projector comes on, it's really eating a little bit of battery.
That's one thing you noted, Tim. You guys were reporting about 3.5 hours battery life.
We saw about 5 in kind of light usage, you know, taking pictures, doing some searches. If you're doing actual video recording or a lot of that or a lot of hangouts or navigation, you can easily kill this in well under 2 hours. If you're doing solid video recording, it's somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes, actually. So it's pretty limited at this point. But again, like you said, it's just a prototype.
That's what Scoble said. He said, I can kill it in an hour easy.
Yeah. While we're talking about the developer edition, the final shipping product will look different than this. It'll be snappable to a custom set of frames that they're going to sell. So
the rumor was Warby Parker. Is that true?
That's a rumor.
Just a rumor.
I don't know.
We should mention, Robert, you're writing a book about glass.
Well, I'm writing a book about context, the age of context, which includes wearable computers, glass, and Pebble watches and stuff.
Yeah. So how do I turn this on?
So there's two ways to turn it on.
By the way, it's in your peripheral vision always. You cannot. Even if it's above it, I can kind of see there's something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's two ways to turn on. You can just tap the side because the entire side is a touch sensitive pad, I guess.
Okay.
And then you can scroll through.
All right. So now I see.
Actually, let me do something because I can show the audience what you're
what I'm seeing. All right. Yeah. So I'm seeing the time. And I'm seeing in quotes, okay, glass, which is what you're... Oh, in fact, I said it, and so now it's...
Yeah.
Anytime you see that screen...
So
let me pull up the screen so people can see what's going on here.
It's saying I can choose from a variety of menus. We're going to show you the menu I'm seeing.
Yeah.
It dims right away. It's obviously really trying to save its battery life.
Yeah, see,
so
it's off right now.
Let me do it again. Let me...
Touch it on the side, yeah.
It doesn't come right on.
No, you tap it.
Okay. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Okay, glass... Actually, tilt it this way so they...
I see.
You can see it, yeah. Sorry. Maybe get it closer to my head.
Can I do that? can you
pull back down a little bit?
It's so convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Well, this is... So is this the Glass Explorer app you're running on here?
Yes.
It's showing what I'm seeing. A remix of old sex ed films. Play.
I wish it was that good. So
how come I'm seeing a you searched for that?
Yeah, because you said OK Glass, and then you said Google, and then you said a bunch of stuff that I converted.
OK
into
Glass.
That.
Okay, let's try it again.
So Robert, you actually have if you can see that box in the corner, can you reach for
put that there?
See
that box?
It's right there with by your hand, your other hand.
What?
See where my finger is wiggling?
Right here.
There you go.
I'm wearing glass, dude.
Thank you.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, glass.
I'm like, what box? What are you talking about?
Take a picture. So it does it immediately, and that's the picture it took.
Yeah.
Now, if I were going to... Okay, so now what?
So let me just show you the UI first.
Yeah, what?
So,
yeah.
No, just keep it up.
Okay.
There. I'm pretty good. So on this side...
So you're just sliding through the stuff.
On this side, you get to see all the stuff I've done or emails that have come in. Hopefully, I don't have
any... That was an email I just saw.
Yeah. Video.
Settings.
Okay. Now, sorry. It went.
Temperature and pedal.
On this side.
This is Google Now Cards.
Yeah. So on one side is Google Now Cards, which includes my stocks, my.
Your calendar.
The other way. Yep.
There's the Giants game. The Giants won. That's good news.
Yeah.
And there's a picture I just took. So that's interesting. So now I'm back in the middle, which is the commands.
And that's the cool part of this thing. When you like when I walked into the airport last Friday, it told me my my gate number and my ticket.
It knew.
It knew because it's
Does it pop that up or does it do you have to scroll through it to get it?
You just scroll through it. It'll chime at you that there's some new information and you just scroll through it. And it really is useful from that the remote control is laggy, so this is not how it looks in the glass when you're not.
No, it's pretty responsive.
Yeah.
Robert, question for you. Is this, how much more useful is this than just having Google Now on my Android phone, where I have these same
record a video?
Well, for me, it's really useful if you're dragging two suitcases through the airport, because you can see something without using your hands. And for photography, this is mind-blowing.
So 10 seconds is the max on the video.
You can extend it, but 10 seconds the nominal is the default max.
And then I can play it back by sliding over to it. It's recording audio as well as video.
Yeah. There's a speaker in the back. There's a microphone up here. There's a front-facing camera, 5-megapixel camera. We should have Tim talk, because he'd write the review about what's in these things.
Yeah. Well, Tim, throw in anything you see. So primarily it's a camera. It's video. You get your Google Now card, so anybody who's using an Android phone will be familiar with that.
You load apps in on the app that I'm using. So I have Path there.
So how would I share a picture to Path?
You just find the picture, tap it, and then choose share.
Okay.
So find a picture.
So here's a picture. Share.
Now tap it. Tap it again. Okay. And
sadly, the voice recognition share. Is limited just to that initial screen. You can only say Google Glass, do something. Everything else you have to do by touch.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I just shared that.
Yeah, you did.
What did I share it to?
Probably Google Plus.
Okay. So, sorry.
No, that's okay.
But that was, you can see how easy that was.
Yeah.
That's why there's so many pictures, and it automatically hashtags through Glass.
Yeah.
So that's why there's so many pictures up on Google Plus, primarily from Robert.
Yeah.
Of just as you walk.
I find I take about 5 times more pictures with this thing on than with my cell phone, particularly with my kids, because I can capture moments that I just couldn't capture with my cell phone.
Now, isn't this supposed to be that you're not allowed me to use this?
No, that's false.
What are the rules about this?
The rules: I can't let them leave my possession. So
okay,
I've let 400 or hundreds of people try them on. I was at a concert the other night, and I was just swarmed by people.
I guess that's now your picture on your Google timeline is of you in the shower, which Miriam took. It was not taken with Glass.
No, yeah, with her iPhone. Yeah,
yeah, but of you wearing Glass, and so that got shared immediately.
Yeah,
that video that I just accidentally shared is shared.
Yeah, you're on some other mic.
Hold on 1 moment.
Look at that. That's pretty cool. Somebody, you guys are all immortalized.
Where's your Google Glass?
Somebody in the chat asked if there were any security measures on the device.
What's that?
Are there any
security measures?
So basically, anybody can pick this up and put it on and start going through your emails or sharing pictures onto your Google Plus account or Path or anything else. There's no sort of biometric security or any PIN code. There was an app released that will add in that sort of thing, but there's certainly nothing built into it. The only security that's here right now is the ability to find the location of the device from the My Glass app. So if somebody takes it off your face and runs away, you can see where the glass is, and you can actually remote disable it as well if you want to.
Yeah.
But there's nothing to stop somebody from picking this up off your desk and throwing it on their face and taking pictures and posting them online.
No, that's why it doesn't leave my face.
Again, something easily fixed. And this is really a developer edition. This is not what they expect, a consumer edition.
Yeah, I do use two-factor authentication, and I can turn off. It's hooked up to my Google accounts, and I can turn those off instantly. Yeah. If you steal my glass, I'll be on
You'll
my
disable
iPhone
it right
and
away.
Disable
yeah.
it. Right?
Tim, how does it have to? It has to connect to the internet somehow.
Yes. Right, so it's actually kind of interesting how this works. By default, it's going to connect to your phone over Bluetooth tethering, which, depending on your carrier, may actually cost you more money. I'm on Verizon. It's $40 a month extra for me to actually be using Glass through my phone.
To have that tethering capability.
Yeah, it appears like a laptop or any other Wi-Fi device or any other Bluetooth data device. So if you're on different carriers, the cost may vary, but you're almost certainly looking at something additional per month. You can also connect over Wi-Fi if you want to directly, but at that point you won't be able to get GPS navigation, and you also won't be able to get your text messages on the device. But you can still do searches and look up things and take pictures, of course, even with no connection.
So it's Bluetooth to a phone using DUN, dial-up networking, Bluetooth DUN. Or if you're in a Wi-Fi area, does it have its own? It doesn't have its own Wi-Fi built in.
It's unclear, because you have to add, like with the Twit network, I had to add it in the app after adding it on my phone.
So your phone already is on our Wi-Fi network, but the app also need to be on the Wi-Fi network.
Yeah.
That would imply that maybe the Glass itself is doing something with the Wi-Fi network.
There's a Wi-Fi connectivity from Glass. If there's an open network, you can connect to it directly from the headset without having to do anything on your phone. But if there's a password or something funky that you need to enter in, it'll have to go through the app, and at that point, it'll get synced up to Glass, and then it'll connect that way.
So that's interesting. So if you're in a Wi-Fi open Wi-Fi area or at home or at mm-hmm. work where there's Wi-Fi, you just tie it to that. You don't have to tie it to your phone. You don't have right. to do any done or anything like that.
So here you can see Wi-Fi is disconnected here.
And I gotta stress this. And I know you did in your review, Tim. I think people really act as if this is something like a consumer product might be, and it's not.
No, this is very early days. I think Robert and I are both very excited about the potential of Glass. I think there's a lot, but right now it's pretty disappointing in terms of the functionality. But again, this is very early. It's for developers. Google's trying to get these out in the hands of developers before the consumer release right. again sometime next year, with the hope that they'll be able to do lots of crazy things in apps. And we've already seen a bunch of cool apps coming out, and you know, there's probably another 8 months or so before the commercial release. And at that point, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of really exciting stuff.
Yeah. So they're asking, M5's asking in the chat room, where does this picture appear to be? It is, you look up, it's above your vision, and it's exactly what you would expect, frankly. It's like looking at a little screen that's above your eyebrow. It's not some magical, you know, we read earlier that was projected into your eyeball and all that. No,
it's like a billboard that's out at distance. It's like a billboard.
Generous. It's not quite a billboard.
I think it's a 25-inch display at 4 feet, something like that, is what they say, which sounds about right to me. The resolution, though, they haven't qualified, but it sounds like it's 640 by 360, less than VGA, which is, again, a little bit low. But ultimately, you know, it looks fine. It's not great, but it looks fine.
It is not necessarily distracting, first of all, because it turns itself off. And once it's off, it's just a little thing there.
Yeah.
And even
after
if
two days, it just disappears.
You're used to it.
I'm used to it.
You could drive with it on.
All the
take
time.
A shower with it on. Actually, can it get wet? No.
It's been wet. This was in the shower, and it works just fine afterwards, right? I had it in the rain today, right? So it can get wet. It's not recommended that you get it submerged. You know, it's not waterproof.
Yeah, obviously.
It's water resistant. So
you don't. There's no head gesture yet. Because I'm thinking of the Saturday Night Live skit from last night.
There is a head gesture to turn it on, which is
go ahead. Show me how to turn it on.
I set it at 30 degrees, so it comes on right about here.
Can you show that, Chad? Do you have that there?
Now you can.
It's Fred Armisen is.
You can set
hysterical.
It to any degree between 40 degrees and zero. I had it at 10 degrees, and it kept coming on and wasting my battery, so I set it to 30, so it doesn't come on.
And is that the easiest way, rather than tapping at the temple, you want to be able to look up and do that?
It is if you're holding something, right?
Right.
If you're holding groceries coming in the door and your kids are doing something cute, right. I do this, okay, Glass, take a picture, and boom, you know.
I think
and
this
also,
is pretty accurate.
There's a compass
here.
built in as well so that you can actually do head tracking as well. So there's actually like an Easter egg built into Glass that you can look at a photo of the team. That's a 360 picture. You know, you actually turn your head and look up and down, and it will pan around the photo as if you were standing in the room with
him. This is from last night's Saturday Night Live. Fred Armisen is
my phone, and now
Russell Meeks, their
Google
tech
Glass. The phone
guy.
Is up here, and I could use it without being rude or distracting. and it's simple. You just toggle through the menu like this, and you have to activate it kind of just little. Like this.
Yeah. By the way, it's not Glass, but it looks a little bit like Glass. That's it's something cool. The prop department built.
No one knows you're doing it.
A little bigger than.
Come on.
I mean, I noticed
come
you're
on.
Doing it.
Oh, well, sure, because I told you. Now, there we go. It's on. Okay. Now, to give it a command, all you have to do is say, okay, Glass. Okay? Now, what's your Wi-Fi password?
Oh, at NBC, it's Peacock.
Great. Okay. Peacock. Peacock. Password, Peacock. Peacock.
You know, anybody's ever used Peacock. Voice recognition has Peacock. Done this, whether it's Glass or your phone Peacock. Or anything else.
Isn't this great, Seth? You know, I was doing this on the phone. I wouldn't be able to talk to you like
especially trying to transcribe emails Peacock. Through Glass. I found myself repeating myself
Peacock.
And speaking very clearly and enunciating just like Fred is there.
Peacock. 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 And I'm on? No, I'm not. Damn it.
You get the idea. We don't have to show the whole thing. Do watch it though; it's very funny.
Here I'm looking around that panoramic photo. You can get a sense.
Show the screen on his phone.
It's jittery because of the screencasting, but in my Glass, it's very very smooth.
So this is a photo that you took. That's a panorama.
No, this is the team, the Google team that built this.
Oh, neat.
It's kind of an Easter egg that they hid beneath the...
Oh, this is the Easter egg you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so that kind of shows the potential for augmented reality within Glass. I mean, that's the thing that I think people are most excited about, and the thing that's really missing in Glass right now for me anyway is any sort of aspect of augmented reality. There's nothing in here that really, you know, tries to look like it's overlaid over the environment, but this certainly shows that the potential is there. So I'm curious...
I don't understand, Tim. Why is this augmented reality? I mean, this is just... He's looking at a panorama.
Well, This isn't augmented reality, but it shows that the potential is there because it can track your head in two axes. So it means that it could be doing some overlays over the environment and positioning things in space that you would try to turn your head to see.
In other words, so it knows what you're looking at.
It knows what direction you're facing, both maps in terms of axis, X and Y axis.
Maps turn. When I turn my head, the map turns in the UI. So they are using sensors to do various UI elements. If you have a long email, you can scroll through it by moving your head like that. So,
okay, Ryan, what do you think? You want it?
I don't think I want it now. It sounds really interesting. It sounds like something that I would eventually see myself using, but I consider myself kind of on the bleeding edge of technology and gadgets anyway. I think there's a lot of interface issues that need to be worked out. I think the biggest problem is battery life.
Hopefully they have
a solution. 3 hours of use is not...
No, I don't believe the reviews that say 3 hours of use. I get a full day out of it consistently, but I use it like it was designed to be used, not as a tech reviewer would use it. The projector, when you keep the projector on, like for video, then the battery goes dead. But most of the time, you're going to walk around your life and not have this on very much. You know, you'll see a notification pop up when you're...
I'm not going to have it on at all, I can tell you right now. It's okay. It gave me a headache just from the short amount of time I wore it.
How many years do we give Leo before he gets on?
No, somebody in the chat room, CR1 in the chat room says, it's just high-tech birth control. It's
you know what?
You'd be surprised.
Absolutely not true, man. At concerts, you should see who comes up to me.
Tim and Robert are both saying it's a chick magnet.
My wife has to swat them off, man. Seriously, at the concerts, man, people are really much more excited about this in the street than the tech journalists.
That's your experience too, Tim. When you walk around, people go, "Ooh."
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually giving a speech yesterday, and I was driving down there in the middle of nowhere in upstate New York, stopped over to buy a drink, and the clerk at this gas station in the middle of nowhere, an older gentleman, I was wearing this, he goes, "Hey, is that Google Glass? Can I try it on?"
Wow.
I was shocked that he recognized it. So it seems like it's amazing to me the amount of perception that there is around this device already, which, again, is not ready for consumer consumption just yet.
I know the answer for Robert, but Tim, would you buy this?
For $1,500, no, absolutely not. Not right now. I would definitely wait for the consumer version sometime next year, which hopefully, you know, the cost will be dropped by, you know, 2/3, I would say, is a pretty good estimate. And, of course, the app selection will be much broader.
I'm predicting these are going to be $200 to $500. And I would not be shocked if Larry Page made it $200. This thing has nothing in it technology-wise that costs a lot of money other than the projector. And yeah. I've talked to the Chinese supply chains. You can buy these projectors for $25 to $50.
Yeah, the teardown was just $100 or something, right?
There's nothing in here. It's a crappy camera. It's a TI chip with some RAM with a cheap battery. There's no cell phone radio in this thing, so it should be cheaper than a cell phone in quantities. Now, they haven't yet been able to make a million of these things, but next year they will be.
Do you see people gaming with this?
Certain kinds of games.
I'm thinking of Ingress, which is a Google Android game, came out of Google.
That's where I'm going.
I'm pretty positive that Google's going to do something like some sort of extension of Ingress at I.O. here in a couple of weeks, because they're inviting everybody who's going to I.O. into Ingress, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see some I.O. integration there.
Yeah, Ingress is a game that you play while walking around the world, so that kind of game is going to be really interesting here. I'd love to play a game where you find power outlets, right? And you get points. You get points for finding a power outlet. Like I'd love to go through the Twit Studio and just tag all the power outlets and take a picture and sort of tag you in an indoor positioning map. And then other people who need a power outlet, they'll get directed to it, right?
That's very interesting. That's a good use of it. Ingress is obviously it's an interesting game, but it's obviously a Trojan horse for something much more useful. Perhaps power outlets. Perhaps who knows what. But the idea of getting people to play a game that ends up mapping the universe in interesting ways.
Yep. Now, I was just at SRI this week, and SRI is building this kind of stuff for the military, only they get to play with expensive ones.
Right.
So they showed me a binocular that had two 1080p displays and two 1080p sensors in it, and doing complete augmented reality.
Right.
And that... I could sit up on the mountaintop and tag buildings.
Right.
You can guess what they're going to use that for in the military.
Right.
Sending flowers, I imagine.
Yeah. But then they can put virtual actors on the ground. Like they put some trucks on the ground and they put gunmen who were running through the trees. And it was so lifelike. I could not believe it. I was shaking the binocular around and they were staying on the ground like a human would. And it was like, wow. So think about version 3 or 4 of these things.
Well, I also think of Daniel Suarez's books, Demon and Freedom TM, where people are walking around in the real world, but they're seeing a metaverse overlaid where you see reputation scores and things over people's head. This is the kind of hardware you'd need to do that's augmented reality. And it's not just, hey, there's a store there with a Yelp score of 3 stars. It's also, this person has, you know, does this, this. I could see a lot of value in general.
This is why this product, and Tim, you might jump in here. This product reminds me of the Apple II. When I unboxed my Apple II when I was 13 years old, it didn't do anything. It had a cassette tape drive. How many apps came with the Apple II? I think there was like two apps.
Basic.
Basic was the only one I needed.
Basic and soon you got a couple more. It feels like that, and it was extremely expensive. My dad spent $3,000 for his Apple II in 1977 dollars, which today would be $15,000. So this feels like that. This feels like the beginning of a 20-year journey through wearable computers. That we're going to be on together. Some kids at the concert who were going to Berkeley came up, and I said, man, this is your future. This is going to be like your Apple II. The Apple II, for me, changed my life through my entire life, right? And it took 20 years to realize the personal computer to where we understand.
In fact, when you first encountered them, for most people, it was like, well, this is useless. This is stupid. What would you want this for?
Yeah.
But for kids like us, this was something like, wow, I can see what I'm going to use this for.
Yeah.
So maybe, I'll give you that. I mean, right now, it's a very trivial product that has very limited use. It's a little distracting. It's a little weird to wear.
Yeah.
But I think if they can figure, I think the interface is really the key. They got to figure out a way.
It's too simplistic right now. And I understand why they made it simplistic. So it's this, virtual strip of cards. It's too simplistic because I want some of the augmented reality, some of the gaming stuff. And they had real trade-offs. First of all, the processor's not all that great here. The battery life isn't good. It's expensive. And humans are freaked out by this thing, right? So the privacy debates we've had about this and the freakiness debates, they really, I think, constrain the UI to keep it from doing things like live streaming. I'm sure that, next year somebody will hack it and make it possible to do that.
The one thing that really freaks people out that would make it very, very valuable, in fact, it's critical to that idea of reputation score, is face recognition. That's what it needs to do and should do, but it's the last thing they're going to let it do because that's where you really get privacy issues.
Even with the...
But God, that's what you want it to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with... I mean, Miriam, when I brought him home, that's her first question was... Can I see who my friends are with this thing? No. Can I do augmented reality?
Imagine looking at this audience. We've got about 35 people in our live audience and know everybody's name, know what they all do, where they're from, and to be able to talk to them. And that made it first seem creepy, but in the long run, really, that's a way to connect.
Yeah.
That's a way to say, oh, I see you're from Nashville. That's cool.
By the way, we're bootstrapping that world. I took a picture of you guys and posted it, and then people were tagging themselves in the picture.
Oh, really?
So within a few minutes,
that's interesting.
On Google Plus, right? We can all tag each
other. They're collecting that information.
So if you see that you're in a picture at something, you can tag yourself, and within a few minutes, I could get that information anyways because you even accepted it, allowed me to see that.
I don't think it's creepy. The people in the chat room say, oh, that's creepy. That's faux relationship. It's not. It's how people converse in group settings. When you don't know somebody, you need one point of connection. If you're a good host and Robert's standing next to Tim, I'll say, Robert, this is Tim. He's the editor-in-chief at Engadget. Robert Scoble. Tim, you got to know this guy. He interviews all the great startups. You give them a piece, and now you have something to converse about. That's how you create relationships.
By the way, you can do OK Glass, Google. Come on. OK Glass.
Straight out of Saturday Night Live.
Google Leo Laporte.
And so are you looking at now, you're going to look at information about me. But you got to get everybody to shut up around you. That's the only problem. It's not going to work at parties. Leo Laporte is there. You go again. Now, yeah.
Perfect. I see no problem with this.
No, but you, I think you would agree, Robert. Ryan, that this is... Do you agree with the premise that Robert had that this is, in a way, this is the Apple II? Initially, it's like, well, what the hell? But can you see the promise here?
I definitely do see the promise. I love the idea of facial recognition. I think there needs to be huge security permissions issues. You need to go into the idea of having a single unified source of everybody's identity. So, Robert doesn't find out information about me that I don't want him to know. But the idea of going to a work meeting and forgetting 3 of the 6 people's names at your table, but have your Google Glass remind you of that and what projects you worked on with them on previously, you know, it is a very powerful thing. And it's something that business computing has been trying to do for a while with LinkedIn and all these contact databases and that kind of stuff. And I see applications in that regard as well as, you know.
And that's why I'm writing a book on context, not just about Google Glass, because there's an app called MindMeld that's coming out on the iPad, and it listens to you talk like in a business meeting. And it can bring stuff on the screen as you talk about it. So if we start talking about Apple, it starts bringing information up on the screen. It's pretty interesting.
Well, and this is what Eric Schmidt was talking about in his speech that many thought was kooky, if not creepy, about walking down the street and it knows you want pants. And it says, there's the pants right there that you want. The idea of search knowing before you search what you're looking for, that's what Google Now is all about. And we're in the very early stages of that. I can see a time where we get over the creepy and we start to not only like it, but count on it, where we feel like, gosh, why doesn't my computer know what I want before I want it?
Yeah, and the code name for this product was Wingman. In other words, they really thought about...
I like that.
Yeah, they thought about the assistive nature of
these kinds of products. Can it help you get laid?
No comment.
Only with a certain kind of person.
Miriam does not let him in the bedroom.
Really?
Except for
the
shower.
Seriously, Miriam, how do you feel about all of this? Do you mind that Robert's wearing these all around all the time? She says she doesn't mind it. She figures you'll be bored with him soon enough, and then there'll be something else. He moved on to something else.
I don't think so. This is not a segue where the segue stayed the same. There's a new app every 2 days.
See, I think you're right. I think that's one of the key features. It reminded me of the Segway at first. Neat idea, but you look like such a dork using it that nobody's going to ever use it. But you're right. This is a platform. This is a very different. Segway was not a platform. This is a platform. Yeah. Very different way of thinking about things.
This also marks a huge change for Google's business model, and maybe the other two guys can get involved. There's no advertising on here, but there is an affordance for commerce. I want to ask it, hey, let's go to a Mexican restaurant tonight and take five people with
I us. Think advertising might be dead.
I don't know about dead, because there still is something about advertising.
I don't think people like advertising. I don't think, I'm going to interrupt this show in a moment with an ad. I think people would far prefer. That's what Eric's thinking of. We don't need to do advertising as long as we know what you want ahead of time and we could give it to you. You're going to say thank you. It's advertising, but it's much more effective.
Yeah,
it's
context sensitive.
You know all the background necessary. Yeah. It's what their goal has been with advertising.
Sure.
Know as much about you as possibly can, so they can give you targeted ads. And there's nothing more targeted than a pants ad when you know you need pants.
Well, this is why I think these are going to be $200 or $300 to start with and go down in price.
They should give them away.
Well, $200 is giving them away at what they are about costing.
Think of all the information they're getting. They're gathering from the
not only that
early users.
But if I'm using these. Even with an
you're
iPhone,
you're feeding Google.
You're not
useful.
You're not using Apple stuff. You're not using Facebook stuff. You're not using Amazon stuff. Now all of a sudden, you are addicted to the Google world.
And that's the interesting question: how long before Apple and many other companies are doing something similar? Does Google have an advantage that others cannot compete with?
No, I think others are.
I think you're
going
to see every company in the world do this.
Google does have some real deep advantages of knowing what I'm doing. I mean, they have my Gmail, so they can look into that. They have my calendar, so they know what's coming up on my calendar.
Apple has all that in your iPhone, though.
If you give them permission. I took out all the Apple apps on my iPhone and put Google apps, because the Google apps are way better.
Right?
What else do they know? They know every search I make, right? They know some of my social behavior through Google Plus. They know some of my buying behavior through other things. So they know a lot, and they know my maps. They know where I am right now, right? My Google Latitude already is shared with my friends that I'm here at Twitch.
What you really got to work on, and I'm sure they know this, is you need a better interface. I mean, what if you could not wear glasses but just have this piped directly into your brain?
Well, that's
that one is connected to my optic.
That'll be 20 years. If you stay alive 20 years from now, you'll
I'm
see
working
that.
On it. I'm going to have more margaritas. It's our Cinco de Mayo edition of This Week in Tech with Tim Stevens, editor-in-chief of Engadget. Nice to have you, Tim, wearing his glasses. Tim, let me ask you, though, real quickly before we go to the break. You're wearing them now. Do you wear them all the time?
No, in fact, I'm kind of struggling for reasons to continue wearing them day to day. If I'm sitting here at my PC, then it's easier for me to take a call through my PC. It's easier for me to keep up on emails and everything else through my PC. So right now, no, I don't really feel a need to wear them day to day. I still am wearing them a bunch just because I'm still going to continue to write about them and to kind of review them as they evolve. But ultimately, there's not really a compelling use for me to be wearing them if I'm just standing around in my office.
It's a review unit for you. It's not something you want to live with.
Right. So I'm forcing myself to live with it more than I might otherwise to make sure that I get, you know, the full experience, as it were.
Right. Same thing I felt like with, say, the Pebble Watcher. But now I know Robert wears them. Like,
well, I wear them. I take them off once in a while. Okay. But
I found, I mean, it kind of bothered me after a while. I didn't wear them
my
that long.
My optometrist, by the way, I had her wear them, and she checked out my eye. She said because the screen is at distance, you shouldn't experience eye strain, except that it's above.
That's
you.
The problem I have.
And the reason you'll have eye strain is interesting. Your eye blinks less often when you look up. And so she said your eye will just dry out. It won't be harmful, but it might make your eyes
blink more.
Look down a few times. Right. And I think that's part of why they don't turn this thing on very often.
We know from the source code that there will be blinking as one of the gestures.
Yeah.
Eventually.
In fact, there's an app out already that can detect
blinks.
Tim,
have you loaded that app? I haven't been able to load it yet.
No, I haven't yet myself. I haven't really done much hacking with the thing yet, no, but I'm eager to try it out. Yeah.
Also with us, as you can tell, Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer from Rackspace and from PCPer.com, Mr. Ryan Shrout. I'm wearing Google Sombrero. It's the latest, latest thing. See, I wouldn't mind. Google Sombrero. It's a new product from Google. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who do a great product for anybody in the IT business. Go to Assist. Now, see, this is I can just imagine this. 10 years from now, I won't do a Go to Assist ad, but when you're sitting there and your client's going, I can't get the computer to boot because the printer's not working and I don't know what the accessory is. You just say, all right. And Glass will say, you need to Go to Assist. Oh. And you'll install it and you'll run it and you'll be in there and you'll be fixing things. And then Go to Assist now, by now, it'll have 20 modules. Right now, it's got three great modules. They have the remote access, always the best remote access ever, for unattended support, up to 8 sessions at once. You get a full assay of what's on the computer. But now they've got the Go to Assist ticketing system, which is fabulous for, you know, tracking changes and staging upgrades, for keeping track of where there are problems. And the monitoring, proactive monitoring, which is fabulous. So you know there's a problem long before your client calls you saying, I don't understand. The printer's not working. It's out of toner. You know ahead of time, toner's low. Network's down, Wi-Fi's not working, hard drive's full. All of this stuff is so great. Service desk management, monitoring, and, of course, remote support, making the ultimate in IT tools. If you're in the IT or support business, if you're interested in becoming a managed services provider, if you just want to be more effective, if you want to be an IT hero, you've got to try Go to Assist. 30 days free, including all three modules, the service desk, the remote support, the monitoring, right now. When you visit GoToAssist.com, click the Try It Free button and use the promo code TWIT. GOTOAssist.com. Use the promo code TWIT. Do make sure you check the box for all three of them, even if you don't know if you'll be using all three, because you've got to just, it's amazing what they can do. Be a support hero. GoToAssist.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Well, we've been having fun with the glass holes here.
Privacy.
You've convinced me.
Have I infringed on your privacy?
No, because I see you're wearing a big old thing on your head.
Oh, that it turns on. You can see that.
Yeah. Can you? Oh, yeah. I can see it.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the other side, you can see a little glass screen. Yeah.
Record a video.
Look at the people.
Yeah. If you're not close to it, and if you're not looking right at them, they can't see that the screen is on. I've been doing a lot of testing and asking a lot of people if they can see the display. And the way that it reflects, if your head is more than about 20 degrees off of that individual, they won't be able to see it.
So I can't tell you're recording now. But I can see it now.
Yeah.
I can see it now. Yeah. But you have to be looking for that. It's not exact. I think they need to put a red light on that.
Well, if somebody's...
That's exactly what I've been saying, too.
If somebody's touching it or talking to it,
it's certainly obvious you're wearing it.
If you're in the bathroom and I start playing with my glass,
Now, you said in your review you'd been in 10 different or 20 different men's rooms.
60 different men's rooms now. Yeah. I always do this, though, because...
That's going to be the new symbol for I'm not videotaping this, is you put them up on your head.
Yeah, because I don't want the perception that I'm videotaping.
Yeah.
And,
I don't blame you.
I don't want to get punched in the face.
There are people that would,
probably.
Frankly,
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, it's probably smart. You do the same thing, Tim? You don't wear them in a men's room, probably.
I have actually. I wore them into a few just to kind of see what the reaction would be, and I haven't had any.
I'm testing glass. Don't hit me.
But I certainly do get a lot of questions. Are you recording me right now? Which shows that there is, you know, there is a concern amongst people, you know, and people can't tell whether you are or are not. So I think there's a lot of this is public perception. You know, we need to inform people a bit better about what they can and can't do. But still, I definitely think that Google needs to do something. Even if they just made the screen flash red when it's recording, I think that would be something a bit more noticeable than what's in there now.
What's real interesting is I'm really paying attention to people. People in bathrooms and what they're doing. I've seen so many people doing this in the stalls.
Everybody with has their cameras, cell phone. Yeah.
And so they don't complain about using a cell phone.
Yeah.
And by the way, I can record you with this in a lot more choice ways than, you know, if I'm going to do this, you're going to know this, right? If I'm doing that, you don't.
Now, Ryan, you've got something a lot of other people want is the Oculus Rift, and we have heard a lot of very positive things about this as well. This was a Kickstarter project that finally started shipping. I'm also on a contributor to that, and I haven't gotten my Rift or my Glass, but it's fine because I have friends who can let me try theirs. This is a virtual reality helmet. We've seen these before, but this one seems to be the first really to be super fast, super effective. You've reviewed it. What do you think?
You know what? From a technological standpoint, it's really, really impressive. It has the fastest head tracking I've seen on any of these types of devices. It works very well. The setup was super easy. No drivers at all. As long as the game engine that you're using recognizes it, it just works. The problems that it has is that right now, this is, again, kind of like the Google Glass, this is a developer kit, right? This is not meant for consumer usage. The resolution on the display is very low. It's 1280 by 800. Which is split between your left and right eye. So you're getting 640 by 800 on each
eye. Not super high res.
It's not super high res. And because those pixels are so close to you, you get this screen door effect that you maybe saw in very old CRTs and that kind of thing, where it basically looks like you're looking through a screen window. And that's very noticeable right away. As soon as you put them on, you know, anybody that does it, that's usually the first thing they comment on. And the good thing about that is, you play with it for 5 or 10 minutes and you kind of, just like your eyes would adapt to looking through that screen window at your house or something like that, you eventually your mind kind of blurs that out and you see the image as if it were. It's still a low resolution image, but you don't have the black lines necessarily going through it. It works really well. The problem I had personally is that I, after about 10 minutes of use in a high speed scenario, like high movement, high speed action gaming environment, I got motion sickness. I didn't get sick anywhere, but I was like, oh, I'm starting to get a headache.
No, a lot of people have mentioned that. Yeah.
But in a slow moving environment, like the only demo that comes with the Oculus SDK is something called Tuscany. You're walking through this little house.
It's got a little fire in the fireplace, nice view. Yeah.
You're walking very slowly, though, is the key. And I don't think that's an accident, right?
I didn't get sick as long as it was me controlling it. As soon as somebody was driving me around, I was like,
But
if I'm looking around or I'm using the arrow keys to slowly move, in other words, the reason people get sick is because their inner ear says they're not moving. But their eyes say they are moving, and that this cord causes illness.
And so your body is trying to make you get sick to get rid of any poison that you may have had in your body and that kind of stuff.
You're tripping, man. You better throw up.
It's weird. The thing I had the most problem with was when you use, like, if you're playing Unreal Tournament with this and you want to look to the side to target a character or somebody, and you move the mouse in the same direction or the opposite direction, but now you have two, like, things are moving at different speeds depending on the mouse.
That's horrible.
My head did not work with that very well.
No.
But like, there's like a roller coaster type thing, which is basically a castle scene where there's just like a fixed path that you go on. When you're not in control of any of the motion, you can just control where you're looking.
Yeah.
And that wasn't nearly as big a problem. So there's some people are saying that once we get higher resolution screens, some of that will be alleviated. The other big
I think the more realistic it is, the worse it's going to be. I don't think it's going to get better. I think it's going to get worse.
Well,
we spoke with Palmer Luckey from Oculus We spoke with Palmer Lucky from Oculus, and he said one of the big issues is the walking speed of these games. A lot of these games, like Unreal, you're walking at 20 to 30 miles per hour,
really
which is completely
fast.
Unrealistic.
Yeah.
So your body's completely freaking out because it thinks you're walking this quickly, but of course there's no motion.
That happened to me in Bioshock Infinite. I stopped running around because I was moving way too fast.
Yeah, so he says as games start to adapt to this technology and as game developers know about it, as they're developing the games, that things should get much better.
Move slower,
The only other technical thing they can change is the input latency. Like the latency between when you move your head to when the image, the signal goes away from the sensors into the computer, it renders an image, sends it back to the display. And that latency is probably in the 20s of milliseconds right now. So there's a little bit of delay from when your head moves to when you actually see the result of that.
Latency is the killer in this. That's the killer in this. And that was why I was impressed with the demo. There was virtually no latency. You're saying the more complex the environment, the more latency. That makes sense.
Well, sure. I mean, like, so you have to wait for the game graphics card to render that image and send it back. But if it's a high frame rate, it won't be a problem. It's literally a latency issue of the sensors in the Oculus and then the software stack because it's going through USB.
Yeah, it's doing a lot.
There's some slow things there. So they're working on speeding that up for the final consumer version, and that should also help alleviate some of the motion sickness type scenarios.
I've worn virtual reality helmets for almost 20 years. I mean, I've tried them at SIGGRAPH and for years, and that's always the issue is latency. Even if it's milliseconds between the time you turn your head and the time the picture moves, that's enough. What I was impressed with Oculus Rift is how low they'd gotten. It's almost instantaneous.
And that's why in slow-moving environments, that latency isn't nearly as apparent as it is in fast-moving environments.
Well, I don't know. It's movement, but it's also complexity. I mean, if you have 18 guys coming at you in Call of Duty, that machine is going to be working pretty hard to keep that up to date in real time.
Yep.
So,
but, I mean, for a $300 developer kit,
it's cool.
It's a really cool thing to have. Like, everybody that comes into the office, you know, wants to try it on and give it a shot, and we kind of judge internally who has motion sickness and who doesn't. So, one of the things I'm trying to do is I'm going to try to teach myself, my body, my mind to understand that there's not an issue by let's use it for 10 minutes every day and see if I can teach myself to get over that motion sickness. I don't know. I don't have motion sickness in any other facets. I fly and all that kind of stuff.
All right. So you don't get car sick. They have these rubber bands that you snap yourself with every time you get seasick and it's supposed to fix it.
I don't know. I thought about taking Dramamine, but I don't think it's the same effect.
But the reason I think these both are interesting, Glass and Oculus, is that technology is starting to catch up and starting to give us new forms of input. Somebody in the chat room said, and I agree, that if you could maybe tie this to Kinect or some sort of motion sensor, what an amazing thing. It's not just the movement of the head, but the whole movement of the body. So I think we're seeing some big strides. And they're working in the right area.
The sensors are coming, too. There's this company called PrimeSense in Israel. They made the technology that's in the Kinect. But the new sensor they showed me at CES is a stick of chewing gum. So it's far smaller. It's less than $100 and far more accurate. They showed it on a projector down on a desk like this. And it was so sensitive, it could tell how hard I was touching the desk. And it was unbelievable.
Kinect is a good example because it's like the glass. Kinect was the fastest selling consumer good at the time ever in history. Everybody snapped it up. But just like the VIC-20 or glass or any of these things, they're early days yet, and people go, oh, that's it, huh? And they make a decision about how motion but we can go well beyond now what the Kinect did. That was a
There's a new Xbox
cheap product
coming soon, so we, safe to expect a new Kinect to be coming soon as well.
Oh, interesting. What do you know? May 21st, Xbox Next will be announced by Microsoft.
Right. There's a lot of speculation. We don't really know anything. But certainly, it's a pretty safe bet that there'll be some sort of Kinect-like interface included with the device. But at this point, we're still waiting to find out. But yeah, it's only a couple of weeks away before Microsoft unveils the console. And I think, learning from the Sony mistake of not actually showing a console, I think it's pretty safe to say we'll actually see some hardware on the 21st.
Microsoft did delay that. It was going to be in April. And maybe that's why they delayed it. They said, maybe we better show something.
Could be.
Maybe we better have something to show. Any predictions, anybody, about what we'll see in the next Xbox?
I mean, we know what the hardware is going to be. It's going to the computing hardware is going to be almost just like the PS4. There'll be a couple of little variations.
AMD?
It's going to be AMD based x86 APU type hardware, right? I mean, it's going to create an interesting ecosystem where the bottleneck of development is pretty much gone across PC, Xbox, in PlayStation. And I think because of that, you'll actually see faster, more robust, you know, improvements in gaming, graphics, technology, all that kind of stuff across the board, because they don't have to worry about, you know, what target platform they're going to use, how much of a pain in the butt is going to be to convert from the PowerPC to the Cell processor to the x86 processor and all those graphics subsystems and that kind of thing. So I think they're both of these companies, Sony and Microsoft, now understand that the hardware will matter much less than the software interface and their services they offer along with it.
And I think you said the key word, because I think gaming is, console gaming is kind of at a plateaued. It's dead.
I don't know that it's dead, but I think
there's a huge opportunity because you've got a box in the living room.
When I went to China, all the kids have cell phones. That's all they know about gaming.
Gaming tablets and cell phones now? It's not console, or maybe it's PC if you're a hardcore gamer.
I see the world as mobile. If the mobile phone has taken a lot of attention away from other platforms.
I know an 11-year-old who is just as comfortable. I don't see him ever using. Actually, I take it back. He uses a console. He moves around fluidly. You have kids too.
Yeah,
moves around fluidly.
My 19-year-old son's over there.
iPad is fine. Phone is fine. Whatever he's got, basically, he'll play Minecraft on a PC. He'll play Call of Duty on an Xbox. He'll play Minecraft or some other similar game on an iPad. It doesn't matter. But what I don't think is happening is that people are spending a lot of money on consoles and console games, which are historically very expensive.
Patrick, if you had to buy one,
that's not true.
iPad or Xbox?
It's so different. See, that's $400. You want them both.
You have $400.
So, Tim, you're thinking people are buying consoles.
You said
consoles.
If you had one to choose, it would be the iPad, right? iPad.
Well, it says more.
Yeah.
It's certainly a challenge to the console market at this point. Mobile gaming is, of course, a huge development, and a lot of people are happy to just, you know, play some sort of game. They don't necessarily need the relative complexity of console gaming versus mobile gaming. But right now, you know, we're seeing a lot of companies trying to do some crossover gaming where you can, you know, play on a console or on your mobile device. And Microsoft is in the best position of anybody at this point to make that work, of course, with Surface devices and other Windows RT and Windows 8 tablet devices and mobile phones, of course, as well. So I think that that's also going to be a big part of this, is the ability to play games across platforms, pick up where you left off at home. Yeah. But of course, whether that helps the Xbox by, you know, giving people a better way to take those games home, or whether it hurts the Xbox because now those games are going to be playable on Windows phones and tablets, that remains to be seen.
PC gaming sales have grown the last four years.
That's my contention. If you're a serious gamer, you get a PC.
Well, and consoles, they're down a little bit, but I think that's only because we're at the end of a seven-year console cycle.
Everybody who wants one's got one.
Casual gaming is not taking away from those hardcore gaming. It's a completely additional market, right? So the cell phone and the tablet gaming, I can't deny, it's huge. It will be bigger, if it's not already, than consoles and PCs. But to automatically assume that because of that, consoles and PC gaming are declining is just wrong, right? I mean, we see the sales, right? There's another... People
I didn't
still
say that. I just said it made it.
No, I said it. But okay. But compare the numbers. What are the numbers of console games?
I don't know. All I know is when I saw the presentation from AMD talking about the PlayStation 4, and their big deal was, okay, here's how it's going to affect us on the PC side as well. They're still showing year-over-year growth on PC software sales, not on hardware sales, mind you, but on software sales. And that consoles were stepping down, but obviously this year and for the next probably at least 24 months, that will go up again as well.
I think the telling thing for me is that we haven't seen a successful console release in a long time. The Wii U, I don't think anybody could call a success. The PlayStation Vita certainly wasn't a huge success. You know, those are really nice pieces of hardware that in the past gamers would have snapped up, I think. That hasn't happened. So, you know, it could be said that a lot of people are waiting for the next PlayStation and waiting for the next Xbox. I think that's definitely true. But I think the jury is still out on whether or not these are going to be as successful as the current generation of consoles. It's possible that, you know, the generation of consoles that we have now will go down as, you know, the most successful generation ever.
I expect there to be lines for the next Xbox.
I'm sure there will be, but will they be as long as for the last Xbox?
But will it be for gaming or for gaming plus? Will gaming and media, or is that just not an important category?
I think TV at home is really interesting. I mean, the TV world is shifting so fast. I just got a new Comcast X1 box, and it's all cloud-based, right? The DVR is all cloud-based, and it shows how the cable system is trying to respond to these new usages. How many are there? Any cord cutters here that people have gotten?
Oh, I bet half our audience.
You
I can't
get
cables,
a lot of your internet off.
You have to be a cord cutter.
You got it.
Yeah, so, you know, hooking a box up at home that lets us do more of the online video is going to be interesting. And if it does gaming, even better, right?
Yeah. I mean, I found some quick numbers where they're talking about, you know, 2012 was $18 billion in PC sales, and they're estimating 21 for 2013 and then 22 billion for 2014. It's still going up. And console software sales are down a little bit from, like, 24 to 23 to 22 in 2013 is what they're saying. I don't think it's not going where. I don't feel like it's getting smaller. I feel like it's encompassing more things. I think the software services that Sony announced at their PlayStation 4 announcement are indicative of how can we maybe have saturated this audience. How do we bring in this additional audience, or how do we introduce new revenue streams into this audience?
I think that's part of the problem. You know, the reason where this comes from for me is talking to Nolan Bushnell, who really said, I think console gaming is plateaued. It's reached the end of the line. Yeah. And partly that's because of tablets. But tablet is really pretty much casual gaming, right?
Yeah, there's some nicer driving and first-person shooter games.
Certainly, but if you're a serious gamer, you're running a PC,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
or maybe a Steam box. So I guess the question is, well, who's buying consoles and why? But it used to be you'd buy a console because you didn't want to configure a PC. You just put the game in, it plays. You don't have to think about it.
Out of 100 gamers, how many are those hardcore gamers? 20?
Well, 10? Yeah, but that 100 gamers was 30 gamers 10 years ago because the platforms of iPad, iPhone, they didn't exist then.
So what do you do on a next-generation Xbox or PlayStation?
You play the same types of games. You play the same types of games that you do today, more advanced. You play the same types of games that you can on an iPad and an iPhone, but now you're using different accessories like smart glass or the Wii U controller. And then you're using using Netflix, and you're using Amazon Prime, you're using all these other additional services. I'm not arguing that the console isn't expanding out only from being primarily gaming focused, but I guess I don't understand the argument that console gaming has plateaued. I don't know.
Well, why
is that argument?
I study
valid?
Startups. If you're going to start a startup, what kind of startup would you build? If you're going after the gaming market, would you build an Angry Birds or a Rovio kind of?
Because of investment, right? I don't have the ability to raise the capital necessary to release an Xbox or a PlayStation 4 or to build a Call of Duty. But there are companies out there that do.
The new companies are not going after PC gamers or console gamers. They're going after the mobile gamers. That's where I'm seeing tons of new startups.
Like the UFO.
Maybe it is like somewhat like, though.
Again, when you go to China, the kids have a cell phone. They can only afford one device. They're going to put all their resources into the cell phone. They're not going to buy an Xbox.
Maybe it is a little bit like video or television or movie production, where I see console gaming as more like a movie studio, where you're spending $100 million, $200 million on a blockbuster. It's very hit-driven. If you've got a hit, you make a sequel. That's not going to happen on the mobile platforms. It's cheap and easy to develop a lot of titles.
But that's why you see
and those are more like the TV shows, the cheaper stuff.
That's why on the consoles you see games that come out of EA and the existing companies. I study startups. I study disruption. I study things that happen new. And all of those new companies are aiming at the mobile market
or
the tablet.
But it doesn't mean you're not going to have big studios doing $200 million blockbuster games like Call of Duty Episode 5 or whatever.
Like I said, there's going to be a line for the new Xbox.
Yeah.
And there's going to be
a line for
the new $60 Halo.
Those big studios are struggling. EA's been struggling a lot lately. You know, there's been so much consolidation lately as these big studios are buying up the smaller ones, and then they're shutting down a lot of the smaller studios that they've picked up. Of course, you know, there are certainly there's a market for big games like Call of Duty, but ultimately those markets are based on huge sales for these consoles. And if these consoles can't maintain the sorts of sales that we saw in the last generation with the Wii and the Xbox 360, then you know, things are going to get pretty dark for the big studios like EA and Ubisoft and others.
We've seen that in the movie industry over and over again, though, that these studios flop. There's a hit studio. And it's a hit-driven business. 9 out of 10 movies lose money. 9 out of 10 games might lose money. But when you get that game that suddenly is a huge franchise, then you're rich.
Yeah.
They're giving me heck in the China. It's not about China. It's about the youth. You know, Patrick, how many of your friends have Xbox? How many of your friends have mobile phones? Every single person in your class has
everything.
Mostly mobile phones.
Everybody has an Xbox.
I don't have an Xbox.
Well, you're weird.
No, I don't play games.
Well, you're weird.
I play games.
You can count one of them as
every guy has an Xbox. Okay, great. You know?
People but, who never mind.
I just spoke at a school in Amsterdam. I asked them this question: how many people play console games? That not at very many hands went up. How many people have an iPhone? Or a mobile phone?
Do you have the primary communication device for your generation? Of course, that's going to be 95%.
Right, everybody's going to have that.
So if you're a startup,
but if you play games, you're going to have an Xbox or PlayStation.
If you're going to build a startup to build a new kind of game, are you going to aim it at Xbox?
Because
or
you're scared because you don't want to have to raise $200 million to make a franchise game that may make nothing. Yeah. And I've seen people, completely fall apart trying to crack the console game market, including some very, very big games. But that doesn't mean it's going to go away. There's still going to be people making Arnold Schwarzenegger films. There's still people going to make the next Call of Duty.
I didn't say it's going away. I just said it's not as interesting.
I agree. It's not as interesting. And I kind of was the one who brought it up. I'm not forcing you to defend my position because I do think that the hardcore gamers might stay with a PC, and the casual gamers might do mobile. Yep. And it makes it a little difficult if you're a console game. And I think it's one of the reasons consoles are looking at other ways to get in the house, including video and so forth.
Well, and Xbox is doing the Xbox Glass, or the trying to tie the mobile into Xbox, so the kids use the tablets on the couch with the Xbox. I think that will be a thing to watch when they announce this new Xbox. Can they make it a family machine again, where people can personalize their video games on their tablets and then play them with the Xbox when they get home?
You also have to make it cheap enough. If the Xbox is a couple hundred bucks, or even now they have a $100 version, then it's kind of like, well, you're going to have it, right? Because you want to play that one game. I bought Bioshock Infinite on the PC and on the PlayStation 4. I admit that I finished it on the PC, though, not the PlayStation 4, because I like that big screen. Actually, I have a bigger screen on my PlayStation 4, but I'm farther away.
You don't have a PlayStation 4, but I'm going to assume
three. Did I say four?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't say anything.
Rio just broke the embargo.
Oh, crap. Let's take a break.
I'm coming over to your house tonight.
let's be honest. If I had a PlayStation 4, what would be so different? You think it'd be much different?
I don't know.
Except that it wouldn't play any of the old games.
I mean,
how different's going to be?
You know, I played with augmented reality binoculars this week.
Let me ask you, Ryan. How much different could a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox 720 or whatever they call it be?
So I posted a story in the show notes about 4K gaming on the PC.
4K.
And that is where you get the difference. Like, so they're fundamentally different experiences,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but where am I getting a 4K display?
I bought a 4K TV for $1,299.
Oh, you bought that weird one.
For the Seiki.
I saw you setting that up. So what do you think?
All right, we're all coming over to your house tonight.
it's surprisingly good for a $1,300 50-inch 4K TV that I bought 3 weeks ago. It looks really well. I've used it as a desktop PC. You can set it up in that way. We had to tweak some of the settings out of the box. It didn't look very good with games, but you turn off denoise and turn down the sharpness and a couple of things, and it produced a really great gaming monitor for $1,300, which is about the same price of a 30-inch 2560x1600 display from Dell. You just got to get a little bit further away.
So is that going to be what's driving people to consoles as 4K?
All the consoles will support it. And depending on how quickly, TV manufacturers get that down. I mean, I think Sony has one for $5,000 that's available now. This one is obviously a little bit of a different beast. It's not something that's, for sale at Best Buy or something. But it was on Tiger Direct. It's not like
No, no, I know. People have been talking about it.
China.
Yeah. Yeah. And this just in, Nintendo's going to have a 720p console. So that's pretty exciting.
They're catching up.
It's HD. No, I'm just. That was made up. That was a made up story. I don't even know. I don't know if that's true. But you're right. If it could be 4K, or you could use the Oculus Rift with it, or
you can't do that with your iPhone right now. I'm not.
That's right.
They're just very different markets, and I don't think either one of them is going away.
That's my point. It's like movies, where you still go to a movie theater, and you'll pay $9.50 to watch a big screen movie. Not that you don't have a great home theater at home. But there's reasons why you might want to see it in a movie. And, it's not like these consoles cost so much that you have to choose, am I going to get a console or an iPad? Patrick's going to get both.
Yeah. Scott Jordan,
bad news for you.
You know, my friend in Sun Valley has three Xboxes with three big screens, and he only plays one game on it. It's a driving simulator. It's awesome.
This is Scott Jordan of Scott eVest. Yeah. So wait a minute. Now he has 65-inch displays, three of them?
Yep.
And three Xboxes.
All networked.
But they're networked, so you're playing the same game on all three?
Yeah, it's three separate screens. It's
and
awesome.
You're in he has one of those rumble seats or something you sit in with the controls, and you actually have pedals and stuff.
It's the ultimate guy room, you know?
And he says, let's drive to the grocery store. What do you say?
Okay. We raced, you know,
I don't
Ferraris
understand driving games because I drive. I mean, what?
Oh, when you play that on that system, it's right. Like a whole
other experience. It's a lot faster. Cheaper in a video game, Leo, than in real life.
It's a whole other experience.
Well, it was painful, too, I could say.
We're going to take a break. Come back with more. We've got a great panel for you. Ryan Shrout from PC Perspective and the host of This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton. Great show. Thursdays, right?
Thursdays, yes.
What time? 7?
6 p.m.
Pacific. 9 p.m. Yep. Eastern time. Really, if you want to keep up on the hardware, I used to host that show with you, and it was... So we got somebody who knew what he was talking about, Patrick Norton. But I'll tune in because I want to know, you know, like... In fact, I'd like to ask you about Haswell because we now have a date.
Yep.
In fact, a bunch of stuff happening with Intel. A new CEO.
Mm-hmm.
We've got HD 5000 graphics. We've got Iris... So let's talk a little bit of hardware with Ryan Shrout also here. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer from Rackspace, the king of internet startups.
I try to get it right.
Not just internet, startups.
Yep.
You get a whole – by the way, everybody wanted to know what all the notifications on your phone. They saw your phone, and it's got all across the top bar on your Android phone. It's like 1,800 notifications.
I have a lot of apps.
You might, might want to clear some of those.
I try a lot of apps out.
Clear some of those out there. Also with us, Tim Stevens of Engadget. He gets to try all the new stuff, Engadget.com. Our show today brought to you by the Audiobook Source, the place to go if you love listening, audible.com. Everybody who has a commute knows about Audible. Anybody who goes to the gym ought to know about Audible or walks the dog or does the dishes. Anytime you want to read a book but you can't hold a book, you can listen to the best books in the world, 100,000 plus strong. I cannot sell audiobooks more strongly. I just love it. I see Mark Maron has a book now called Attempting Normal. I got to love Mark Maron. The podcast WTF, very funny guy. He's got to have a very funny audiobook. But you can also, so that's nonfiction, but there's great fiction as well. I'm just finished Joe Walton's Among Others, which is a wonderful book about fairies and sci-fi. Right now I'm listening to a book about... the Hollywood Revolution of the 70s, called Pictures at a Revolution, that Andy Anaka recommended. Just fabulous. The thing is, for a while, I didn't have time to read, or, you know, I'd try to read in bed, and I'd fall asleep after one page, and I kind of lost the art of books. And I was so glad to rediscover books about 10 years ago when I commuted 2 hours a day to Tech TV. 2 hours was on a good day, longer in some cases. And I'd listen to these books, and, you know, I'd love it so much. The commute, not only would the commute go by, but I drive around the block a couple extra times to get to the end of the chapter. I was so engrossed in these audiobooks. I've become a fan, and Audible is the way to go. If you're interested in audiobooks, there's so many great titles to listen to. The Iceman. I got to listen to this. The Iceman, the true story of a cold-blooded killer. Bronson Pinchot narrating the story of one of the deadliest killers in American history. Ay, ay, ay. The Autistic Brain, Temple Grandin's new nonfiction is out. The number one download, I guess because of the movie, The Great Gatsby. A lot of people hadn't read that. See, that's great. Or Norse, this is good. This is a license plate. See if you can figure out what this license plate says. NOS4A2. What do you think that's about, huh?
Nosferatu.
Yeah, baby.
Mm-hmm.
New Joe Hill novel, Kate Mulgrew narrates that. Best readers, some of the best actors in the world, reading great books, fiction, nonfiction, thrillers, mysteries. I'll tell you what, I can get you a couple of free books if you're interested. If you go to audible.com/twit2, you can sign up for the Platinum Plan. That's the 2-book-a-month subscription. Your first month is free, so that means your first 2 books are free. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. Pay nothing. You'll keep the books forever. But I think Audible's betting, and I agree, you'll never cancel once you become an Audible listener. It's Audible for life. I've been a member for more than 10 years, and I love it. Audible.com/twit2. 2 books await you absolutely free. So Intel says June for Haswell. Is that something? Let me ask you the basic question, Ryan Schrout, and then we can go from there. Should I? Is it nuts to buy a computer until Haswell comes out?
It seems like it. If you're going to buy a laptop, probably yes. Because the main advantage of this architecture is not in CPU performance. You'll see a little bit of an increase there, but their main focus is on enabling things like connected standby and other, you know, battery saving capabilities as opposed to performance improvement capabilities. On the desktop side, it won't really be necessary. It will have better graphical options, but
that's
on the
HD 5000.
Yeah, so they have several different brands that they're adding with this. They announced the Iris and the Iris Pro. These are new names for stuff that we already knew was going to come out.
Right.
That used to be called the GT3 version of their integrated graphics. It doubles the amount of computing units inside that inside the graphics pipeline. And then the Pro version actually adds a large chunk of embedded memory onto the processor itself. And it's a really interesting thing to have this. You know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say exactly how much it is, but at least triple digit megabytes of cache on die, on the chip, with this graphics.
And this is because they've reduced the process size to what, 0.22 nanometers? They've got so much space.
Yeah, so it's they're 22 nanometer chips. Ivy Bridge was also 22 nanometer. But what they were able to do is basically their big problem, their big performance deficit in processors has always been on the graphics side. Right. You know, they've been
increasing. If you wanted real graphics, you'd get AMD or NVIDIA. Yeah.
And that's also been kind of a problem for, say, ultrabook designs, where you have a very, very limited thermal budget. You don't have very much room to put in a heatsink, where you would need to cool two independent discrete chips, a processor plus discrete graphics. So they're kind of responding to customer requests of, hey, we want to get that same level of performance or as close as possible out of your single chip. And adding in, the embedded memory doesn't add that much more to the wattage of power consumption required to add it in. So I think we'll find that this upcoming generation of laptops will have much better battery life than they've had before and much better graphical performance than they've had before using those higher end options.
Is Intel in trouble?
They're making billions of dollars a quarter, so I don't think so.
But their profits are down.
Yeah, a lot of people's were. I mean, are we talking about just from what markets they're in?
From ARM, the challenge from ARM, certainly it's not AMD, but from the challenge from ARM, the post-PC world.
So it's not tomorrow they're going to announce a new architecture. And this story is on CNET and several other places on there. They're going to announce the first redesign to the Atom chip since its release in 2008. And this is a complete rework. It's not, as we've seen over the last 5 years, take this architecture, tweak it a little bit. Let's maybe add hyper-threading and see what else we can get out of it. This will be a complete redesign. They're taking it from an in-order architecture to an out-of-order architecture. It's going to be built on that 22-nanometer process technology. This architecture was built for cell phones and tablets.
Interesting.
It was not a repurposed Pentium design that they have brought down, you know, in scale. And, you know, what Intel really hopes is, Intel's competition is not really AMD anymore on the CPU front. It's Qualcomm. It's Samsung. It's all the ARM partners that are dominating that high-growth market.
There is no popular cell phone running Intel at all.
No. They released Medfield last year, and I think there was one in Europe. I don't know if they ever released it over here. There was a Motorola and a Lenovo unit that used it. But here's the advantage. ARM will still have like maybe a slightly more efficient architecture at its core, but the advantage that Intel has over everybody else is that they have their own process technology. They do their own manufacturing. Nobody else has the expertise at manufacturing that Intel does.
ARM is fabulous. ARM is just a spec that others create chips based on.
Yeah. Right, and they have to go to external foundries like Samsung and TSMC to have those chips made. And they're maybe on 32 nanometer process. Maybe they're getting close to 28 nanometer process. Intel's running a 22, and it's not just 22 nanometer. It's a really good 22 nanometer technology. And that is their kind of ace in the hole in these kind of battles. I haven't tested any actual devices yet, but from all the information I'm getting, the Silvermont architecture that will be released or announced tomorrow, essentially, is going to really put pressure on ARM and its partners to come up with new architectures or new ideas or new products. And like I said, I can't verify for 100% without, you know, using a phone and seeing what its performance is like and telling you about battery life or something like that. But this is the time where they are actually taking it seriously. Everything else where they've said they were taking it seriously was kind of like they were
we weren't really taking it seriously
till this day. Well, right? They're holding it off till today.
They've been trying. There was scale.
It's interesting because Intel isn't just being beaten on the cell phone market by others, but tablet. on the data center. You forget how many computers Google and Amazon and Rackspace.
Aren't they buying x86 Intel chips?
Mostly, but we're switching over because the power usage on ARM is a lot lower than Intel. So if you're building a new data center for Facebook,
microservers,
for instance,
we call.
What's that?
Microservers.
Yeah, and I met a 17-year-old kid at South by Southwest who's building these supercomputers out of ARM chips, and it's the ARM chips on the data center. So if you're focusing your ARM chips on cell phones, are you going to be able to optimize for both of those markets or both of those?
Yeah, so there's a lot of overlap there, right? So the new architecture will have a lot of those enterprise security features that ARM currently lacks, like, you know, a lot of virtualization technology and that kind of stuff that they'll put in this architecture. And this architecture will be built for tablets and phones, but it'll also be microservers. And I hope we don't see like any netbook rebuilds based around it or something like that. But, you know, you may see the smallest clamshell machines maybe be able to use this chip for that.
Paul Adelini did say we're going to see $200 computers based on Intel processors. I don't know what that means.
It's probably based on this, right? Because, I mean, this is the lowest cost, smallest die that they're going to make.
Does Intel want to be in this business, though? Isn't this a low-margin, crappy business that they've traditionally eschewed?
Yeah, but they're being forced into it.
I mean, it's the growth market, right? I mean, it's if you want to grow as a company with shareholders, these are the markets you have to get into. You can look at a lot of other stuff that they're trying to do, where they're going to make TV networks and all that kind of stuff as well, but it's really all, you know, comes down to this particular market. It's kind of, you know, we wish we still had AMD around, that AMD was still a healthy competitor in the x86 market where their processors were pushing Intel to push forward in that regard. I mean, it's kind of like a depressing sentiment as an enthusiast that we haven't had an Intel processor release for over $350 because, trust me, they would love to sell a $900 processor. But there's no performance, there's no segment for that anymore because nobody has pushed them forward. So
tough road to hoe for them, though. I mean, it's a race to the bottom. It's not a market they are comfortable in.
It's not quite like the Nettop era where you were actually selling $200 machines. If you're selling a tablet for $600 that is maybe subsidized by Verizon or AT&T, you're still going to make money. Apple makes their own chips. They're able to make money off of that part as well. So you know, they think they need that market, and they're really excited about, you know, this next step that's going to come out. We need to see if it actually delivers. They said it delivered every step of the way, and it just really hasn't. And the real proof will be if late this year, if we start to see, or at CES next year, we see a dozen Intel-based cell phones and tablets, you know, released in that market.
They're going to keep the Atom name.
Yeah, you know, I don't like that.
That's a tainted name. That's like going back to the Celeron, which they did also.
I told them that the Atom name had such a negative connotation in the tech world that they should just
take it to
something else.
Yeah.
I even said, you know, why not use the Pentium name? Because then you get at least people like my dad who know what the Pentium is. Wow, they got that in a cell phone is? They got that in my cell phone?
I got a Pentium cell phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything but Atom, and I agree with you.
Atom, and they reused Celeron, which was even worse.
Yeah. I guess they're out of money. They can't get new trademarks. I don't know.
They can't find anybody to do a new name, huh? All right. So we'll watch with great interest tomorrow. Silvermont will be announced. And shipping when?
Probably late 2013 for some of the components. I don't really it will vary based on the derivation of that architecture. Yeah. So that's the name of the overall architecture, and then we'll be I think Bay Trail is the name of the chip for tablets and Merrifield for cell phones and that kind of stuff. Names that we've seen leaked around forever, but didn't really know exactly what they were attached to.
Interesting. It feels like a rear guard action. It feels like a really challenging market for Intel to try to get into. And I understand they have to, because if they don't, they're going to be left in the dust in the post-PC era. But I don't know. I'm not. Now, tell us about the new CEO. Paul Otellini is stepping down. And we've got a new CEO, Brian Krzanich. When does Krzanich start?
I don't know. I think he actually started already.
He's already working.
I think so.
Well, he was Otellini said, blame it on Krzanich.
May 16th.
Okay.
Oh, May 16th? Okay. To be completely honest with you, had maybe heard his name once or twice before this. He comes from the manufacturing side of things.
COO. Very much like Tim Cook.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people in the stories, like over at Engadget and The Verge, they were talking about, this kind of doesn't make sense, right, for a company that says they want to change their direction.
Click the wrong button.
They want to become a consumer-oriented product company, not a chip company, that hiring a guy whose only background is
process,
but making chips, like the hard job of actually making the chips, is a little confusing, and I completely agree with that sentiment.
He's not the big picture guy. He's not a vision guy. He's a guy who knows how to make chips cheaper.
I mean, he may be, and we have no idea, I guess.
Right.
But it seems odd to bring in a person who has focused on the manufacturing and process technology for so long to somehow guide the company in a direction where they're trying desperately not to be just a chip company anymore.
Now, Otellini was not an engineer. So it's true in a company like this that the engineers like to see an engineer running it.
Yep.
They want to see somebody who speaks the language and understands.
Intel, when you walk through it, is a very engineering-heavy company. And when you go up to, have you ever visited one of their fabs?
I mean, no. I'd love to see
it. It's like 16 football fields and a huge building and $1 billion cost. You really understand why these fabs are so expensive to build.
And you understand ARM's advantage to be a fabless technology. Although somebody's got to fab it, Samsung or Qualcomm, or somebody's got to build it.
It's an advantage for ARM on their books, and it's much less risk for them, but Intel is hoping they can prove that it's an advantage to be the process leader. So maybe that again has something to do with him coming in.
I think you just nailed it.
They want to bring in third parties to use their manufacturing, like, so they want to take this Atom architecture and let other people bring in their third-party IPs, pair it with their CPU design, and maybe make chips that way. Right, that's something they've announced last year, that we're open to letting other people use our manufacturing if we're a part of that licensing deal. So,
don't you think the goal is to get Apple to put Intel chips in its ARM-based iPad and iPhone? Isn't that what Intel wants? They already have a great relationship with Apple.
It's the biggest customer, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they would love to be in everybody's laptops and cell phones and all that kind of stuff as well.
Well, you get an Apple, the rest, Samsung copies, and everybody else falls into place.
Yeah.
Where is AMD? Are they dead?
Not yet. No, I mean, their discrete graphics business is actually really good. They'll have a lot of income from the licensing with Xbox and PlayStation going on for the next 5 to 10 years at least. They kind of announced at CES low-cost parts to kind of compete in that tablet workspace, and they have the advantage of having a really, really good graphics system. They have kind of a lagging behind processor stack, but their graphics stack is really, really good. So depending on if everybody wants a game on their tablets, like we were talking about earlier, they may make the better chip for that. I'm heading up to Toronto this week to learn all about those new APUs, those low-power APUs, and how they might hope they disrupt the market, at least.
There were rumors that Apple might go ARM on its desktop. I don't think that's going to happen. Or is it?
I don't know. I mean, it could. There have been people who have been trying to develop ARM-based architecture, ARM-based systems that are much higher performance. I mean, if they're running in the data centers that Robert's talking about, and that's in theory, they could be transferred up to higher performance usage models, but you have the same. If the architecture is not developed from the ground up for that efficiency model, it's going to suffer. Just like when Intel has been trying to take these other architectures and push them down into cell phones and thin tablet market, it just doesn't quite work. There's too much that's not made to fit there. And I think at least the current generations of ARM architecture, if you shift them up, they become too power inefficient, and they're going to lose on the performance battle in their current form, at least.
We're going to take a break. Ryan Trout from PC Perspective, Tim Stevens from Engadget. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer. Coming back, we're going to talk a little bit about Apple, some Apple news. But first, a word from Citrix, the makers of ShareFile. I've said it for years. Don't send email attachments. It's dangerous. It's insecure. And bounce backs could be a real problem. Our files are getting bigger and bigger, and a lot of email systems won't handle more than a few megabytes, 10 megabytes. That's it. Bouncy. ShareFile is a way to send email attachments without sending email attachments, a secure way to send files in business by sending a secure link, and it works so well. It's great, too, for industries like the medical profession where you've got government regulations like HIPAA. It is HIPAA compliant. In fact, you'll see when you first sign up for ShareFile, you can customize it for up to 30 different industries. And, of course, when you use ShareFile, you can use it on your desktop, but you can also use it on the go, which is fabulous. It seamlessly integrates into your daily routine no matter where you are from any device, including a tablet or an iPhone or an Android phone. I use ShareFile all the time. So, for instance, I'm sending audio to radio stations for the radio show. Let's say I leave and I forget to send a file to one of the stations. They call me and say, where's our file? I've got it on my iPhone. I've already synced it to my ShareFile store. I can send a message very quickly from my iPhone. I don't have to have the file. I just connect up to ShareFile. And it's boom, it's there. They got it. You get notifications when the files are opened so you can track progress. You can password protect files. You could say how long the file is available, a day, a week, a month, a year, forever. You could say how many times it can be downloaded. It really changes the way you work. I want you to try this free for 30 days. ShareFile.com. Click the microphone at the top. Now, Chad, don't click that. Go right to the top there where it says radio listeners. I know that's confusing, but, that's the best that we can do. Radio listeners, click that microphone. Enter TWIT, T-W-I-T. Choose your business. And click try it. 30 days free. I should warn you, you will be hooked. ShareFile.com. I'm wearing a funny hat because it's Cinco de Mayo. Are you gonna go have Mexican food after the show?
Chinese, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
I tried to go to Mexican, but my son said, no, I've had Mexican too.
He's gone, by the way. He's gone. Patrick is a local boy, which is great. So we get to see more of Robert than we really care to.
Went to school with your son for a little while.
He did. Yeah, McNear School. Yeah, absolutely. And I've known Robert. Robert Chatroom used to be the moderator of our chat room.
Laportian.
He was a Laportian. I never told him what the L meant.
That's not what that means.
I never told.
Back in the KGO radio days.
Back on KGO radio. This was 94, 93.
94, 95.
Yeah. Wow.
Back in the Windows 95 days.
Things have changed. Imagine. Can you imagine in 95 what you would have thought? You'd be sitting here, we'd be streaming a television show, high def, on the internet, and you'd be wearing those things on your eyes, the Google Glass.
I mean, we dreamed about some of this stuff. I remember we were playing with See You, See Me, and we were happy.
See You, See Me.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And we would get, like, 3 frames with the chat room.
It's amazing.
There would be, like, 18 people on our
And look at this.
Me.
I mean, Ryan Stroud, he's got a television studio in Tennessee.
Yeah.
No. It looks like, pardon me?
Kentucky.
Oh, whatever. Some state.
It's close.
Anyway,
close.
In 95, we were happy to get, or 94, we were happy to get a little tiny video with 3 frames
a
second.
He's high def. Tim Stevens is in New York State, right? Am I wrong? Are you in Vermont?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm in New York and I'm casting on LTE, so I have no physical data going into my building and I'm still in high definition.
That's amazing. You're using cell networks.
And all because there's no wind blowing in the trees around today.
Unlike a couple weeks ago. We haven't figured that part out. When the wind blows, it doesn't work. But other than that, it's great. It's really amazing. There's no connection.
What's TWIT going to be like in 20 years?
Well, I won't be here. I don't know. I'll be retired or dead.
Everybody's going to be wearing Oculus Rift glasses, and we're just going to...
You know where you could see this stuff happen is at the Maker Faire. Do you love... Maker Faire is so cool. They're all over the country now. We went to one in Detroit, New York, but the original Maker Faire is coming back here to the Bay Area at the San Mateo Event Center May 18th and 19th. It's a weekend. And if you'd like to go to Maker Faire, these are going to go very fast. I want to give you a pair of tickets. The eighth annual Bay Area Maker Faire is coming. It's a family festival, family-friendly festival of invention, creativity, and resourcefulness. It's really great for kids. They have wonderful things for kids. You want your kids to learn how to do this stuff, too, because I think it's just important for them to understand how this stuff is made. You can go to Maker Faire, M-A-K-E-R-F-A-I-R-E.com, for more information to purchase tickets. Or win a pair of adult day passes, good for either day, by emailing marketing at twit.tv. Include your name and mailing address, and we'll choose winners at random on May 8th and notify you then. So I don't know how much. I think we have 20 passes, something like that.
That's cool.
I wanted to give them a plug. This is
a tech shop.
An unpaid ad. Tech shop?
Yeah, they usually have a big area there. Tech shop's a worker space here in San Francisco. And
I love these hacker spaces. They're so
cool. Yeah, they do great stuff. Tech shop's one of the best.
Yeah. And really? That's where Square started out, printed its little device.
You're kidding, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so they have 3D printers. They have all sorts of milling machines and bandsaws and all sorts of fun stuff. And there's lots of companies that meet up there and build stuff there. It's really great.
Email marketing at twit.tv for your passes. We'll give away some number that we don't even know what they are, but some number at random. And if you don't get one for free by May 8th, go to Maker Faire with an E on it at the end, .com. Tom Merritt is here to tell us what's ahead this week on Twit.
Hey, Leo, here's a look at some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Tuesday, May 7th is the Wired Business Conference. Also, EA announces their earnings. Wednesday, May 8th, we'll get earnings from AOL and Groupon. Friday, May 10th, LG's Optimus G Pro is coming to the U.S. as an AT&T exclusive for $200. And Jack Ma is supposed to step down as CEO of Alibaba. All that and more on Tech News Today this week.
Back you get your coverage every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC on twit.tv with Tom and Sarah and Iaz. It's a great way to keep up on your tech news each and every day. Microsoft says, according to the IDC, actually the IDC says Microsoft shipped 900,000 Surface tablets in the first quarter. That's about 6 weeks. That's not bad.
Not bad.
Surprising, frankly. They're planning. Now, this is maybe a little less.
Including all Surface, the Surface
yeah,
Pro?
Yeah, Pro and RT, although I think RT is like this much of the 900,000. I don't think anybody bought RT.
It's certainly not what Ballmer was expecting.
Really? He thought RT would be the hit.
No, I think he was expecting Windows 8 to sell a lot more than
it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Acer says there's no value in making a Windows RT tablet today. They're waiting for the second gen. Microsoft apparently planning a next gen Surface announcement next month, which is awfully soon. That's like 7 months after the Surface sold. It's a challenge. If you're a PC maker, it's a challenging business right now.
Yeah. How many iPads sell a quarter right now?
They sold last quarter, what was it, 30-some million?
Yeah.
Something?
So it's 30 to 1?
Yeah, that's about right.
Or
well, I don't think the Surface is the only Windows operating system that's being sold.
Right.
That's a tablet.
No, but it's 15 to 1 right now if you're comparing tablets, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no, there's other tablets. I don't know what it is. You're right. It's something like that.
It's something like that.
It ain't good.
You can see this when you fly. All you see is iPads and Kindles. You don't see very
boy, many if you see a Surface, it's a rare bird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I saw one in a Panera down the street. Does that count?
Yes.
That does.
Surprised?
I saw a Surface at a Panera.
I had to look twice to make sure, but it was a Surface Pro, and he was doing real work on it and everything.
At least somebody's doing some good marketing. I'm not crazy about the Surface ads, but you've seen the Nokia ad.
Here in the serenity and joy of this beautiful day as we come together to celebrate the commitment.
I want to point out that the groom's side is all on iOS. The bride's side is all on Android. I just want to mention that, just so you know, you know.
Enormous phone?
You mean the enormously awesome Galaxy?
Search one-trick pony.
Aren't you a little young to have an iPhone?
You want to go?
iSheep, copy bots.
Autocorrect this.
Whee!
This is a pretty good ad, I gotta say.
It's great.
I don't know if it'd make me buy a Nokia phone, but I like it. The guys search using Siri, search karate.
Think if they knew about the Nokia.
And then you got the Waitrons, okay, and they're standing in the middle, and they both have Windows phones. Very colorful. One red, one yellow. And this is the dialogue I like.
You think if they knew about the Nokia Lumia, they'd stop fighting all the time?
I don't know. I think they kind of like fighting.
I think they're right. That doesn't mean you're going to use a... it says, don't fight Switch to a Windows phone.
That's a really poor reason for me to switch.
Yeah. It's not selling features and benefits, I admit.
It didn't tell me anything about their product, but just, hey, don't be like them. Buy my thing. Like, that's... Yeah. I mean, it's funny, but I don't
it's
think
about it's about all they got. I got to tell you.
I bet if you showed that to the average person that didn't already know what a Nokia Lumia was, they would not have remembered the words Nokia Lumia after watching
You know
that
where
commercial.
Microsoft spent a lot of money, or Nokia spent a lot of money? I've been watching this great show with Don Cheadle on Showtime. It's called House of Lies. It's about marketing, you know, these business consultants, these management consultants. And they, for some reason, everybody in the show is using a Lumia 920.
Yeah.
Every single person in the show. And they
what
take
a coincidence.
Yeah, what a strange thing. I guess everybody in New York uses Lumias, right?
Totally true. Every time I see it's amazing how many Lumias there are in New York City every time I'm there.
And they also get these really gratuitous moments where they show the user interface up close. It's like you didn't get a big enough budget to shoot this show. You had to sell this, too.
They did that the most recent. Cars. There was iPhones and iPads everywhere. There's one scene where there's, I think, four iPads and three or four iPhones on one desk at one time in House of Cards. The product placement. I mean, I understand people need to make money, and you know, commercial advertising is a challenging thing these days. But product placement is getting a little overwhelming,
exactly.
I think, right now.
Yeah. We'll be glad to use Lumias if Microsoft pays us a ton of, or Nokia. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I like it. It's a nice phone, but...
Absolutely. Nice
so I've been using the Galaxy S. There's the House of Cards with everybody's got an iPhone. The best scene is where Kevin Spacey takes the reporter's iPhone and plunks it in the glass of water.
Yeah.
Kind of gave me chills. I've been there. And then says, don't worry, I'll get you two more. Wow. I didn't realize there was that much Mac stuff. Oh, there's a Canon camera.
Yeah, and he plays the PlayStation 3 game. He plays, I think, Call of Duty at some point. And he also talks about the PlayStation Vita and how he needs to get one for when he's in the car, too, which definitely stood out.
Oh, that was weird. You're right. Because here's this guy. He's supposed to be the house whip. He's like 100 years old. And what does he do for relaxation? He goes in the basement and plays Call of Duty?
Call of Duty, yeah.
I don't think so.
This is what happens when we don't want advertising between our shows anymore.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, really, folks.
The content becomes the ad.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
my
what's
happening.
It's a shame for paying content, though. I mean, I'm paying for that content, and back in the old days, you know, that meant no commercials, no nothing, but still I'm paying for content that still has these integrated ads.
At least, you know, they don't break away. I mean, it's not a minute off from the content. You got to pay for this somehow. So I've been playing with the HTC One and the Galaxy S4. And these are the top hot phones. I would say there are three Android phones that are the top ones. His Nexus 4 is still in there because it's inexpensive and it's a pure Google experience. And when you play with the HTC One and the Galaxy S4, you realize what a boon a pure experience is compared to the crapola. Both of these phones are loaded with, you know, manufacturer customization, so much so it's hard to get them out of the way.
You can't on my HTC phone. You can't even delete a lot of the apps and stuff.
No, you can't.
Which is true on the iPhone as well. There's what 9 or 10
Apple
apps that you can't delete. But it's a lot more on these platforms.
I love the HTC One. You're going to have to be in the Sense universe, just like you are with your DNA there.
Yeah, right? I can't stand AT&T, so I go with HTC DNA. Is the Samsung available on Verizon yet, or is it just AT&T?
I think end of the May 30th.
Very soon.
You can pre-order now. May 28th, they're going to start shipping. May 30th, it'll arrive.
The problem is Google I/O is on May 14th, 15th, 16th.
Don't you think Google's going to announce a successor to the Nexus 4?
I'm hoping.
I don't know about the Nexus 4 or Nexus 7, certainly, but I'm not sure about the Nexus 4 just yet.
The 4, Tim, tell me this, because the 4, when I first saw it, I thought, that is not a mainstream phone. It's a developer phone. There's no LTE. It's kind of low resolution. It's not, but people embraced it because it's pure Google. Do you think Google might say, oh, maybe we ought to make one more pure phone, maybe a something from Motorola and, you know, this Nexus X people have talked about.
So yeah, we've been waiting for that pure Motorola phone for forever now, you know, since they bought the company. And we keep getting these indications that, no, it's not quite ready yet. I mean, this could certainly be the time that they drop something on us. But the Nexus 4 is still a fairly young phone relative to all things. Right. I'm not saying that we couldn't necessarily see a new Nexus phone. But if we do, I think it'll be a different device, either larger and perhaps more premium or maybe even smaller and cheaper. I think a lot of the reason that people are going to the Nexus 4 is because, A, like you said, it's a pure Google experience, which is great. But it's also a very low-cost device unlocked, and it works, you know, across carriers very well. So, but Google still hasn't quite cracked that LTE nut, and I think that, you know, I think, you know, the technology exists for them to do that in their next device.
The rumor is that they will debut a new version of Android, but it won't be a Kiwi Lime Pie.
No full major release just yet, but another point release, which is a little bit disappointing. But, you know, we're still, there's still such a huge lag behind of companies updating. Maybe that's for the best, or maybe just we'll add more, you know, add more fragmentation to the market.
Apple also has its developed. So Google I/O is coming up in a couple of weeks. Apple's coming up in June.
May 15th, yeah.
May 15th for I/O and June 7th for WWDC. So this is a good time of year to kind of gauge what these two companies are up to. We'll certainly see, or will we, iOS 7 at WWDC. There's been some rumor that they're running behind on it. In fact, that they're even transferring people from the OS 10 team over to the iOS team. A flattened iOS 7. A Johnny Ive iOS 7?
It sounds like Johnny Ive's really ripping the guts out of iOS, which honestly, to me, sounds pretty nice. I mean, yeah. I'm not a fan of skeuomorphism, which is, you know, the attempt at giving a 3D lifelike appearance to it, which is probably best typified in the game room, which I think looks terrible. So to have all that stuff ripped out, I think is great. And certainly iOS needs some injections of new functionality. We were talking earlier about the keyboard, and I think, you know, iOS desperately needs a new keyboard. iOS used to be, you know, the great glass typing experience, but now it's lagged behind Android, and certainly BlackBerry 10 has just come out with a great keyboard, too. I think that's really where a lot of innovation is needed. But yeah, it sounds like they're pulling out all the stops and recruiting as many people as they can in the team to try to get something ready in time for WWDC here in about a month.
Can they save the app quality? You know, Google's apps are so much better all the way down the road, from the maps to the calendar to the mail to, you know, whatever.
Sounds like you're bullish on Google.
I am. You know, that's... Yeah. I used to be Apple's number one fan. I was first in line at the Palo Alto store. I've been an Apple fanboy for 7 years, and they've just continued to lose me as a customer. I mean, I still carry my iPad everywhere. I still sit in front of my big iMac. But
what was it that turned the
lack of openness, the keyboard? Yeah. I am 30% to 50% faster. I can beat anybody on any keyboard now with SwiftKey because it predicts what I'm typing.
Well, and it also has flow, which is a natural way to... I have a hard time tapping the Apple keyboard. It's so tiny, I always miss the keys. I have, you know, fingers like, you know, Gollum. But but I can do pretty well on swipe or SwiftKey Flow because I just draw.
And contextual apps. I'm seeing more startups come out with apps on Android that
you
are...
You can't do Google Now very well on iOS. They're doing it.
They are. But, right.
But you have you have to launch Google Search.
A developer can't talk to the keyboard, right. Can't mess with the phone, can't mess with the radios.
You'll never see a Facebook Home on iOS.
Right. Right.
Because they can't hook
in.
Might
be an advantage to some people, right?
But, yeah, I was going to say that.
But I actually like
thing.
The Facebook Home.
Do you use it? You don't have it on your...
I have it in my backpack. I have the HTC One first or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And it's pretty nice. You know,
I ran it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, about the same here.
It's all about your quickly. Facebook pictures.
Well, you and I aren't going to be the market for
that.
But it's well done. You have to admit, it's smooth. It's a nice UI. And it's for a first time out, it's really pretty interesting. But no, Apple will never let that happen, where Facebook can take over the UI and take over the home screen and take over the launcher.
Well, in this case, they might be right. Is there anybody using... Is Facebook Home a surprise breakout hit?
No, I don't think so.
Yes. Like who loves it? Who's using it?
Love it.
Really?
You like it.
Who?
No. Actually, I have friends who love it.
His girlfriend's saying no, she's crazy.
You know, if you're a Facebook person, Miriam is addicted to Facebook, so she would love it, but she has an iPhone, so.
So would you use Facebook Home, Miriam? You've seen it. She says she's not impressed. What happens is it buries all the real functionality of the phone underneath two layers of Facebook. So if you want to run an app, you have to swipe your head up and then hit the app. I mean, it's just everything's kind of hidden away beneath the veneer of Facebook. I can't imagine there's a lot of people who are so in love with Facebook they want to live there.
You have no idea.
Teenagers. Well, who is it? Because the kids don't.
I spoke to these kids in Amsterdam. I went to the university and spoke
to
them.
Oh, the Dutch.
I asked... Who does...
It's the Dutch.
Well, no, you watch people. Anyways, I ask them, who does not have Facebook in this audience?
Well, everybody
not a
has.
Single hat.
No, everybody has. Who does not have Facebook in this audience?
There's a couple. Three.
Yeah, but they're just weirdos.
Yeah.
Everybody, having Facebook is not the same as saying I'm going to live in Facebook.
No, but you watch people. There's a lot of addicts to Facebook. I mean, just go to Disneyland and
they're
listen to the
Facebook
conversation in the line. Oh, I just sent this to your Facebook.
Yeah. All right.
But I like it. But that gives you...
Facebook just blocked...
It shows what happens when you're locked the system down. This is what happened in the 90s, remember?
Right.
You know,
No, Apple, I'm with you 100%.
Apple was so ahead in the 90s over Windows, and Windows just was more open, and developers could do more things with it. So it's not, for me, it's not about Facebook Home. It's about openness and letting developers do interesting and innovative things. So I, you know, it'll be interesting to see where Tim Cook takes this company.
There, the challenge is now, and I think what we'll see at WWDC is going to tell us a lot about that. And I don't, it's hard for me to imagine what a new iPhone might have that would make it a compelling choice over the variety of choices that you have on Android. You agree, Tim? I mean, you review them all.
Yeah, I'm definitely very interested to see what this new iOS 7 looks like. I mean, Johnny Ive definitely has very strong aesthetic sensibilities, so I'm definitely very curious to see how that transitions from the hardware side of things to the software side of things, of course. But from a functionality standpoint, yeah, I mean, certainly, like Robert was alluding to, there's a lot of great stuff coming from developers now on the Android side of things. But sometimes that comes at the expense of pure iOS usability and also pure iOS responsiveness. And there are plenty of Android apps that really kind of kill your phone performance, and that's not something that
and
happens.
And real people
on
iOS don't even think about this. They just say, I'm getting an iPhone because I'm a real person.
Yeah.
Right. And so, of course, we're also talking about Google Glass, but there's certainly a lot of anticipation for a wearable device from Apple later this year. And that could certainly open up the market, too. I mean, having something like Glass really requires you to wear something on your face that is, you know, ultimately not the most comfortable thing in the world. But to replace your wristwatch with something that is, you know, far more functional, that I think is something that will be much more palatable to the general consumers than a funny looking heads up display.
I didn't bring my Basis watch, but I have Basis and Pebble. The wrist is interesting, right? But it's not
as too much.
The problem is you can't do a camera.
Right.
What are you
with
do?
A Pebble? You just or even use it as a phone or anything. You just it's a little notifier. That's all it is.
It can be a really pretty notifier. I think it's going to be gig jewelry, right? You know, and there's a lot of people who buy jewelry that costs a lot more than a watch will cost. I think Apple will sell a lot of them.
Well, we'll see.
As long as it has a cool screen and it has your notifications coming down, I mean, look at how many notifications.
Yeah, they're going to sell a ton of them.
Really?
Yeah.
For some reason, I just feel like Apple's not even going to do it. That it's all just rumor and speculation.
If you think about what Apple has, they have the world's best supply chain. They have the world's best retail channel. And the retail channel is all small stores where they want a high turn per square foot.
Right.
What would turn faster
watches.
Per square foot?
Perfect.
Watches and maybe something on your face, maybe a small another iPad with a Retina screen.
Earrings.
Tim Cook will get his... Tim Cook will have lots of profits.
Anklets, I think they're called. Yeah, anklets, maybe.
No, that's for people who are in house arrest. That's another.
It's a great new market that I have to tap into.
For the house arrest crowd, the new eye anklet. All right, let's take a break. We're going to wrap these up in just a moment, but I want to remind you to back up every Sunday. I tell everybody you got to back up, and if you're going to do it right with Carbonite Online. Backup. It's the cloud. It's exactly what you want to use the cloud for. If you have a backup sitting next to your computer and there's a fire, a flood, or disaster, or somebody steals all your stuff, your backups are gone too. The best backup is off-site. And if you've got a laptop, Carbonite's great on a laptop. You know, 180,000 laptops are lost every year on airport conveyor belts. It is so crazy not to have a backup on your laptop, and that's where Carbonite just is great. It's automatic anytime you're online, even at an insecure hotspot at a hotel or a coffee shop. Carbonite securely backs your data up. When you change a file, it's backed up instantly. It's automatic, continuous backup when you're online, and best of all, $59 a year for everything on that laptop or desktop. $59 a year. In fact, when you use our offer code TWIT, you'll get 2 free bonus months with purchase, so it's an even better deal. Mac or PC, they've got plans for single computers, external drives, servers, businesses as well, always for one low flat annual rate. And unlimited backup, too, and I really like that. Plus, it's cloud storage. You can see your Carbonite stuff anywhere. Multiple servers, multiple homes, so you know you're safe everywhere you go. You got to try it. Carbonite.com. No credit card needed, just our offer code TWIT. 2 free weeks, that's probably enough in most cases to do your first backup set and then just make those changes as you change files. 2 months free when you purchase if you use our offer code TWIT. Carbonite, Carbonite.com. Use our offer code TWIT for a free trial. No credit card needed. I think we covered all the big stories. I'm just looking here.
There's lots of questions about Google Glass, but we'll probably stick in.
I think
in
we spent
room.
Quite a while. We could stick around after the show if you want to just take field questions about Google Glass. Those of you in the chat room, I think there's a lot of interest in it. And it's one of those things I think only a small fraction of 1% of the population is going to get to use until they're a consumer product.
Yep. And I try to give mine to everybody who I see in the street just so they can try them out because there's so much interest about it. And it is a very rare device, and everyone's really excited to try it out. I've been trying. I know, Robert, you have as well, which is great.
Is the universal reaction,
It's wow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's definitely wow, which surprises me. I think, you know, that wow factor lasts a couple of hours, and then you kind of quickly get over it, and then you have to make the broader decision. Does this really fit into my life? Is this really worth the commitment of putting this thing on my face every morning? And that, I think, is a decision that's going to be changing over time as the apps come and everything else comes to the platform.
What's the wow?
I was just seeing that display floating in space. I mean, it ultimately is just a display, but to be able to see your information there. The wow for me was actually the first time I did a hangout with my wife. I thought that the idea of doing a hangout with somebody who can't see you was kind of a dumb idea. But the first time I did it with my wife and I could see, you know, her reaction to what I was seeing and see her talking to me, that was my first wow moment.
Oh, so she won't see you, but she'll see what you're looking at.
Yeah. Right. So I was standing on the beach in California and it was a beautiful view. And I thought, I'll give my wife a call and see it so that she can see what I'm seeing. But, you know, think about going to a museum with your friends and they can't join you, but you could walk through the museum and have a conversation with your friends and say, hey, check out this exhibit that I'm at. This is really cool. And they could all join in with you.
That's kind of cool.
For a lot of people, it's the voice. So watch this. Okay, Glass, take a picture. And it works.
Yeah, I saw you take a picture.
The voice, and this is a parlor trick, but the fact that the 7 commands that are on this home screen always work with everybody really gets people like, wow, that is cool. It's a parlor trick because you have to read the command exactly as it appears. If you say, okay, Glass, take a photo, it does not work. You have to say, okay, Glass, take a picture.
You can be pretty accurate if you have a highly constrained vocabulary. Yes. It doesn't.
And that's why it's a parlor trick. When you actually get deeper and say, you know, try to get directions to an address or something, it makes a lot of mistakes there, just like your cell phone or Siri would make a mistake.
Well, I'm not exactly a believer, and yet I do think it's an interesting technology, and I think time will tell, but
I think it depends on the price.
It depends on the price.
If it's
$200,
everybody, how many people here would buy one at $200?
You guys are nuts.
No, this matches every audience. I've given 7 speeches with
it. There's about half the audience.
Every audience.
I bet half of the audience would pay $50 just to try it on and use it for a day. I really feel like what Tim is saying is like, okay, it's really cool for that 2-hour span, but is it something I'm willing to commit to? And is it going to change my life in the way that I think it's necessary to wear this item every day? I don't know. I don't think the price really matters at that point. I think the price gets you in the door, but it's the usefulness
for me.
That keeps
I'm not taking them off.
I think the interface is very, very poor. I think it needs to be more comfortable, easier to use, and there's a lot of work that has to be done there.
It's
and
a 20-year product.
Yeah.
To me, it's a 20-year product.
I agree.
It's like the Apple
II. And I think that, you know, if what I need is an optic implant, frankly.
Well, that's your 20. If you stay alive 20 years, they'll have that figured out 20 years from now, right?
20 years, I'll be 76. It'll be perfect.
Engadget will have a whole thing on.
I won't be able to get out of bed, but I can go to Paris.
Is this safe? Is the optic implant safe?
That I don't care about, ironically. Go ahead. Give me a tap right here. I don't care about that. All right. Hey, thank you, Tim Stevens, Engadget.com. It's so great to have you. And, boy, that was a perfect LTE Live. This time.
Yes, and really the lights are on now, too, so it's not so dark in here. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a great time. Thank you, Tim. Thanks to Ryan Shrout. Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware is every Thursday in our network, and, of course, he does great work at PC Per. If you are building a PC, if you're one of the few, I tell everybody this, the hardware leaderboard tells you the latest, greatest stuff.
And, Leo, if I can, I want to plug a project that we're working on
Good.
Right now.
Yeah.
All right. So we've started an Indiegogo project to try to rebuild all of our studio and set and cameras and lighting and all that kind of stuff here. Trying to keep up with you. It's a little bit tougher. So we started a project. We got some pretty cool we got T-shirts and different groups you can get in. You can join the podcast for an episode and do a lot of cool
stuff.
What a good
idea, Ryan.
Like that.
That's great. So what are you looking? How much are you looking to spend?
So our initial goal was $10,000, and we hit that in a week.
Wow.
But we had planned out there, well, here's what we can do for $20,000, and here's what we can do for $30,000. And we have a much smaller space than you do, but I think we can do – I remember talking with people just this week about it. What can you really do with $30,000? It doesn't seem like that much money in terms of studio-type stuff. And I look at, you know, what You know, I think when you were building...
I spent $30,000 on cameras alone.
Yeah. But when you talked about what a benefit it was, or how much, you know, the cost had gone down when you built the brick house as opposed to what you did at Tech TV, right? And I'm trying to see if maybe we could do it for a little bit less, more software side of things instead of hardware side of things. So if you just go to pcper.com on the right-hand side, there will be a weird-looking picture of me with a link to the Indiegogo. Yeah, there it is.
Good. Good luck. I think that's great. It's a really good use of Indiegogo. I kind of regret not using it. We asked Kickstarter, and they said no, and I should have gone to Indiegogo.
I actually filled it all out on Kickstarter, and the more and more I read into their rules, it's like, well, I'm not actually producing a product.
Right.
So they're a little bit...
Indiegogo, they don't like established business. They actually turned us down.
Brian Brushwood used Indiegogo, and he recommended I use that one instead. Good. So
yeah, they're a little looser with the requirements. Good luck. PCPer.com. Find out more. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, will be wearing glass in his shower tonight and every night thereafter.
I don't think so, actually.
No, that's enough of that.
That was a little bit of a staged fun thing.
But you know what's great is that, yeah, I think that's an iconic photo every once in a while. And you can't plan these.
No.
But that went viral. And it's going to be 20 years from now, people are going to see that picture.
I just needed a way to beat Tim because, you know, Tim was writing all these great reviews, daily usage.
Just shows
I was like,
you.
Oh, I have to have the waterproof. I need to have the waterproof photo to explain that these are water resistant. You can take them out in the rain. It was a lot of fun. But anyway, I'm working on a book too. So
yeah, that's got. What's the name of that?
Age of Context. It'll be out in October, and I'm studying all these things for Rackspace.
Very cool.
It's a lot of fun.
Where's the best place to find your stuff besides Google Plus?
Google Plus probably, or Facebook.
All right,
search for Scoble.
Very good.
Yeah.
We do this show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific. At 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Love it if you watch live. We certainly pay attention to the chat room, and that's a great way to interact directly with the show during a live episode. But on demand is also great. We make audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv. Last chance this week, final week to buy the Twit Tee. This is the one-of-a-kind, unique T-shirt that we got designed on 99 Designs. If you go to Teespring, another startup, teespring.com/twit. $15 benefits Twit. I don't know what that means. I'm going to get a nicer car. I don't know what it benefits Twit. Well, there's, you know, we have 11. Our rent went up to $11,000 a month. There's a few things we could spend that on. I know.
You're going to need 4K cameras.
Ryan, I don't want to tell you how much we spent building this studio.
We need to start the
4K. I was there. Fund. I know a little bit, but yeah.
You're going to need 4K cameras soon, right?
Shut up.
We're going to need to start the 4K fund for Leo so we can see you in really high def.
No, you don't. You do not want it. Do watch the show live, but if you can't, twit.tv. And, of course, wherever you can get podcasts, iTunes, the Zune store, the Xbox store, all of that. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Stick around afterwards if you want. We're going to do a little more on Google Glass. And we'll see you next week.
This
another twit
is amazing.
Is in the can.